Tomorrow's News Today.
I did post it, and I thought it was me as a doctor and had to do with Red Cross as a Red Cross worker there, which we support. And only the fake news could come up with that one. So I just heard about it, and I said, how did they come up with that? It's supposed to be me as a doctor making people better, and I do make people better. I make people a lot better.
Are you suffering from a serious life-threatening illness? Has your doctor told you you're probably going to die? My name is Dr. Donald Trump, and I have helped millions of patients with conditions just like yours. Cancer, heart disease, ALS, you name it. Conditions your doctor said were untreatable. I've seen them all, and I fixed them all. I use an advanced technique that the cheating medical establishment don't want you to know about. The results are, frankly, incredible. Nobody gets results like this. They're the greatest results.
They gave me 6 weeks to live, but then I called the hotline and was healed entirely through the phone.
I was clinically brain dead, and my wife was about to pull the plug when the doctor saved my life.
If you or someone you love is suffering, don't wait. Don't let the corrupt medical establishment tell you what's possible. Call 1-900-NOT-JESUS today. Let's make your health great again.
Yeah, I gotta say, don't call that number. I don't know what that number goes to. That is a meme number. Do not call it. Yes, folks, it's getting absurd out there. Welcome. This is the Alex Jones Show, Infowars.com, band.video. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I'll be with you for 3 hours today. We are going to be joined by Dinesh D'Souza. Very excited to talk to him in the next hour. I imagine it'll be a little bit contentious. Maybe not contentious, but we probably don't agree on a lot of things when it comes to the Iran war, so I'm very excited to hash that out with him. It should be a fun and an entertaining discussion, but we have a lot of stuff to talk about, including just a lot of crazy domestic news here, and some rather troubling signs for the future of the Republican Party or the conservative movement here in America, including a nearly empty stadium for Erica Kirk and J.D. Vance. They were supposed to hold a combo event yesterday. Erica Kirk canceled. J.D. Vance went and did the speech. And it looks like about a quarter of the arena is filled up. And it's not looking good. Erica Kirk canceled, saying that there were legitimate, credible death threats against her. But the Vice President of the United States is speaking there. I don't think that's true. I don't think the Secret Service, the presidential security, would allow a threat in when the vice president is speaking. But that's just me. So it's not looking great for the Republican Party in the future. In fact, it's looking utterly and completely dismal. At this point, we just had CPAC. It was a bit of a failure. All the stories coming out about that were the extreme lack of enthusiasm. It's basically just a bunch of boomers wandering around worshiping gigantic photographs of Donald Trump's head. And then you've got TPUSA, which is collapsing following Charlie Kirk's death, which I find a total tragedy. TPUSA is an extremely valuable and important movement in America. Even if it was hijacked by Israelis, it still did incredible work in activating the youth and making conservatism acceptable on college campuses, and it's kind of horrifying to see it go down in flames with nothing there to replace it. So what's next for the Republican Party? What's next for conservatism? And is it even possible to pull it out of the fire at this point? I guess that'll be one of the things we discuss with Dinesh a little bit later. We got a lot of stories out of England, the UK, and Europe today that are just bonkers. It's honestly kind of hard to talk about this stuff because it's so, on the face of it, ridiculous. You have stuff like this. Legal advisors help migrants pose as gay to get asylum. Undercover BBC investigation finds. And it's a bunch of videos of Muslim people being like, but I'm not gay. And they're like, we know, but just pretend you are. And they're like, but I'm not. It's like, we know you keep raping women, but just pretend you're gay and we'll let you rape more women. This is the world we live in.
I've been an OFO for as long as I've been an Info Warrior, 18 years.
and Texan, born and raised, so I know, like, knives, like you do. And I finally broke down and ordered one. I got the neon orange, and I'm blown away. I've had Benchmark knives that are easily $400. Had them for a year, lost them. This thing has the same feel, same quality, same, I mean, everything about it. I haven't had a knife stay this sharp in a long time, and I'm, like, horrible with equipment. I'm, like, very abusive with knives at work every day. I'm extremely impressed. I'm very impressed. So anybody out there listening, who knows there's a knife comes back in stock, get one. You know, any of them. I want to get the Ring knife when it comes back out. Other than that, I'll join all the supplements and,
Yeah, particularly the pocket knives, the folding knives, the flip knives are super high quality at incredibly low prices. I mean, these same knives sell in stores all day for like $80 or selling for like $40. We'll be right back.
We now take you live to the Central Texas Command Center in the heart of the resistance. Rallying patriots worldwide. You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to The Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today. Very happy to be with you here on the Ides of April, the 15th of April. It's Wednesday, and we're coming to you live from the Central Texas headquarters of InfoWars. We'll be joined by Dinesh D'Souza a little bit later in the show, and we just have a ton of news to get to and a ton of videos to show you. Please do share those links. We really appreciate it when you help us get the word out there. We have some pretty incredible updates out of Iran, and I'm a little bit confused as to what exactly we're doing at this point. Last I heard, we had shut the strait. Just before that, we were desperate to get the strait open. Now we've shut the strait, unless you ask Trump, who says the strait is open. It's very confusing. I think it's meant to be. I think it's because keeping the strait closed is actually in service of the wider globalist plans of world domination, or to create scarcity, to enact rationing, to create the mark of the beast system, as they, in a hyperactive fashion, in a frantic and desperate fashion, implement digital ID control systems throughout the world as well. It's just kind of hard to keep your finger on the pulse and figure out where exactly we are in this crazy cycle of the Iran war, where it seems like we're desperately trying to figure out what it is we're doing there and why it is we're waging this conflict. Let's go to clip 31 here. This is Trump being asked about Europe's help or non-assistance in opening the Strait of Hormuz. Again, as of yesterday, I was fairly certain that Trump had shut the Strait of Hormuz. I mean, there were still ships passing through. Chinese ships from Iranian ports were getting through, so it wasn't really closed. But he did say it was closed. But they did say we were closing the Strait of Hormuz. But here's Donald Trump contradicting that. Let's watch.
Did you see Europe is now drafting a program and plan to open up the Hormuz Strait without the United States?
It's so sad. We're doing it now. By the way, it's opening. The ships are coming back and forth. Oh, without the United States. It just shows you, how can you have a country, how can you have a group of countries with that attitude? Look at Greenland. We should have Greenland to protect the world against Russia and China. The mention of it, all of a sudden they get, this country should not be paying trillions of dollars to NATO.
I'm a little confused. I don't know. I'm just a little bit confused about all of it. Strait of Hormuz was open. We go to war. Iran shuts it. We say Europe needs to help us get this open. They say no thank you. We say then we're going to open it. You have to open it or we're going to destroy your whole country. Iran says, no, thank you. We say, never mind, then we're shutting it. But now it's open. But actually it's open. I mean, I guess you can take Pete Hegseth's statement from back at the beginning of the war, and it's sort of just it's the permanent truth. The strait is open, except for the missiles that'll destroy your boat if you try to go through. But other than that, it's totally open. And we want it to be, but we did close it. But it's totally open. But also, I need Greenland. But also, actually, I need Greenland right now. again, you know, it's just, we're used to Trump being a little bit off the cuff. We're used to him sort of speaking around certain issues, but it was always like understandable what he was saying. As I try to wrap my mind around what we just heard, it just sounds like he wants to go to war with Europe. It sounds like he's like, they don't want to help us open the strait. They'll be next. They'll be next on the list. That's kind of what it sounds like to me, because it's, Europe isn't helping you open the strait, even though he just closed the strait. And he's like, look, the strait is open. And also I need Greenland. Also I deserve and I need Greenland. It's like, that's not what we're talking about, sir. But apparently these things are related in his mind. I can't quite make the connection, except that we do seem to be driving away from NATO, which is a little odd because we have been using NATO as a vessel to destroy Russia for a while. Things have gone off the rails. I think just in a word, things, as it were, have gone off the rails. Saudi Arabia pressures Trump to scale back war on Iran. Mohammed bin Salman wants U.S. president to lift quarantine of Iranian ports, say diplomats. Saudi Arabia is pressing the United States to scale back its war in the Middle East, fearing Iran could retaliate by blockading the Red Sea and paralyzing the kingdom's economy. And they essentially already have. I mean, the Houthis have said that they're getting into the conflict, and this has scared America enough that we've sent the USS H.W. Bush off. It's operating off southern Africa as Iranian blockade begins. In other words, it's going around the Horn of Africa because we are too scared to go through the Houthi overlook section of the ocean. U.S. sends thousands more troops to the Middle East as Trump seeks to squeeze Iran. The U.S. is sending thousands of more troops to the Middle East in the coming days as the Trump administration attempts to pressure Iran into a deal that could end the weeks-long conflict while still considering the possibility of additional strikes or ground operations if a fragile ceasefire does not hold, U.S. officials said. The forces moving into the region include about 6,000 troops aboard the aircraft carrier USS George H.W. Bush, currently circumnavigating the continent of Africa, and several warships escorting it, said current and former officials who, like some others who spoke on the condition of anonymity. About 4,200 others with the Boxer Amphibious Ready Group and its embarked Marine Corps Task Force, the 11th Marine Expeditionary Unit, are expected to arrive near the end of the month. The infusion of firepower seems likely to coalesce with warships already in the Middle East, just as the two-week ceasefire is set to expire April 22nd. And that certainly seems to be the plan. Let the ceasefire expire and get right back into it, I guess. Iran threatens to disrupt shipping in the Red Sea unless the U.S. Lifts its Hormuz blockade. So the IRGC announced Wednesday that Tehran would not allow the import or export of goods through the Persian Gulf, the nearby Gulf of Oman, in the Red Sea unless the United States lift the blockade imposed earlier this week around the Strait of Hormuz. Ali Abdullahi, the commander of Iran's emergency headquarters, says the measures would be firm and decisive steps to protect Iran's national interests and sovereignty. So now we're talking about cutting off not one, but two incredibly important waterways, shifting goods through the, you know, across the entire planet. Iran used Chinese spy satellite to target U.S. bases, FT reports. Iran secretly acquired a Chinese spy satellite, giving the Islamic Republic new capability to target U.S. military bases across the Middle East during the recent war, the Financial Times reported on Wednesday. The TEE-01B satellite, built and launched by Chinese company Earth Eye Company, was acquired by the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps' Aerospace Force in late 2024 after it was launched into space from China, the report said, citing leaked Iranian military documents. The Iranian military commanders directed the satellite to monitor major U.S. military sites, the newspaper said, citing time-stamped coordinated list, satellite imagery, and orbital analysis. The images were taken in March before and after drone and missile strikes in those locations, FT said. The White House, CIA, Pentagon, and China's Foreign Affairs Ministry and Defense Ministry did not immediately respond to requests from comment. As part of the deal, the IRGC received access to commercial ground stations operated by Imposat, a Beijing-based provider of satellite controls and data services, provider with a network extending across Asia, Latin America, and other regions, according to the report. So in other words, China is being the America to Iran's Ukraine. They are providing the intelligence and possibly the weapon systems that Iran is using to fight America, but they're not fighting us. Remember, this was the precedent we set with Ukraine and Russia. We're not fighting Russia. We're just providing everything Ukraine needs to fight Russia and fighting them through Ukraine. Now China is fighting America through Iran. So again, for everybody that likes to claim retrospectively, retroactively, as if this was the purpose of the attack on Iran in the first place, that China is suffering because of this, people that claim that China is really the ultimate one paying the price for this military activity, why are they contributing to it then? Then why is China helping Iran to extend the conflict? If it was in their interest to end it, then they would certainly have plenty of leverage and, you know, ability to pressure Iran to end it, but they're not. They're helping it. Because it's not hurting them, it's hurting us. And our friends like this, Australia's petrol stations run dry as energy crisis turns existential. Soaring prices and supply fears leave farmers weighing up whether they can afford to plant crops. So that's happening. Again, it's just like, where are the alarm bells? Where are the sirens? Where is the overwhelming public concern about what's happening here? Do I need to read that last sentence again? Soaring prices and supply fears leave farmers weighing up whether they can afford to plant crops. Tell you what, I'm no farmer, but as I understand it, you have to plant crops to have food. Unless I'm crazy, I'm pretty sure if you don't plant the crops, there will be nothing to harvest. And then you'll starve to death. So I think you have to figure out how to afford to plant the food. Only if the fuel supplies have been cut off by America's ill-advised war with Iran, maybe this was the point the entire time. Maybe this is why the Strait of Hormuz is closed and why it will remain closed. Maybe, just maybe, because it's part of a much larger plan to cause starvation and or limit, you know, rationing to control people. And of course, the really depressing thing, the really upsetting thing to know about how this would go if the Strait continues to be shut down and farmers continue to not be able to afford oil or get their hands on fertilizer, they need to grow food, and this starvation really starts to come and we really have to start rationing food like World War II, like we're all getting tickets for a block of cheese a month or whatever it is. What are the odds you think that Western governments will prioritize foreigners before their own people? How quickly do you think it would be before access to food was seen as some sort of reparations against white people? They're like, hey, you had your chance. You know, you guys built railroads in Bengali, so now you have to starve. 200 years ago, you went out of your way to bring, you know, mail delivery to the Congo. So now, as punishment, you have to starve while all of your food is given to hostile foreigners who will steal it if we don't just give it to them. I have the feeling that's where we're going, because in any normal, sensible, just basically sane society, in the case of rationing, you would prioritize your people over anybody else. You would say, look, we're America. We have to feed Americans. You're Mexican. Go back to Mexico. They're their responsibility, right? Go back to Guatemala. Guatemala can try to feed you. We are not responsible for feeding the entire world. What are the odds you think that should rationing come about, it'll actually be the locals and the natives of Europe and America who receive the food? I just feel like we're forging a weapon for our enemies to exterminate us. That's how it feels, at least. Meanwhile, Europe is accelerating NATO fallback plan in case Trump pulls out. A fallback plan to ensure Europe can defend itself using NATO's existing military structures if the U.S. falls apart is gaining traction after getting buy-in from Germany, a long-term opponent of a go-it-alone approach. The officials working on the plans, which some officials are referring to as European NATO, are seeking to get more Europeans into the alliance, into the alliance's command and control roles, and supplement U.S. military assets with their own. This is interesting because really what the lesson they should be learning is that this whole world government thing doesn't really work. Nations work. A nation with an army can defend itself. A coalition of nations without an army can't. It's really not that complicated, but they seem to be confused. They seem to be confused at all of this. So it's like they want to recapture the ability to wage wars as if they were nation states, but do it on an international basis. That's the needle they're trying to thread here. That's the tightrope they're trying to walk. How do we draft our people? How do we create massive land armies so we can slaughter them all in gigantic wars against robots? How do we do that while also not giving any credence or validity to nationalism, since that is poison to the wider globalist concept? So NATO, a European Union army, they want to have the ability to project power, the ability to crush dissent, the ability to wage war against enemies they create. But they don't want to have nationalistic instinct be behind all of it, which is contradictory, because it's that nationalistic instinct that makes people want to go to war. Nobody in Germany is going to go to war so a Turkish dude can sit on his butt and collect welfare. You go to war to protect your people and your family, because the sacrifice of your time and possibly your life is only worth it if it's ultimately to save the things that you love and the country that you were born in. It doesn't work any other way. But they're trying to have their cake and eat it too, I guess you could say. And then you have this. Israel's new spy master is a Netanyahu aide who believed war with Iran would topple the regime. The incoming director of Israel's Mossad spy agency believed a war with Iran could trigger the swift collapse of the regime, according to three Israeli sources familiar with the internal consultations. An assessment of that has failed to materialize after more than 40 days of fighting. I don't think it ever was supposed to materialize, to be honest with you. I don't believe that. I know. Call me crazy for not, you know, intrinsically trusting the head of Mossad. And God forbid that the Israeli spy agency ever let a lie pass their lips. But I have my doubts, folks. I really do. Because their intention was always to create a failed state in Iran. That was always obvious from the beginning. It's what they wanted to do in Syria, and they did it. It's what they did in Libya. It's what they did in Iraq. It's what's been the obvious and really only possible outcome from the Iran war from basically the moment it started, or even before, since just looking at it at a tactical, strategical level, it was easy to understand that the regime could not be replaced, really. They had provisions that precluded that possibility. They had this mosaic operation of decentralized command, means you can't just chop off the head and put another head on it and have the body function. That doesn't work, and everybody knew that before it happened. Everybody knew the strait would be closed. Everybody knew that Iran had prepared for this moment and would not fall just by toppling their people. And just to make sure that that didn't happen, the people that could have potentially slotted into the leadership positions, the head that could have potentially been grafted onto the Iranian body once the first head was removed, was then killed by Israel, guaranteeing that we wouldn't have an off-ramp. And then they did it again. They've done it so much, Donald Trump himself has said, we have to keep secret who we're talking with, because if we don't, then they'll be killed. And then you have the Washington Post, the mouthpiece of the deep state, coming out and saying, if the Iranian negotiators don't agree to our terms, then we'll just kill them. Total terroristic threats. It was always intended, this war, the intention was always to create a failed state in Iran where it could just be an endless cycle of warfare. The weapons manufacturers could constantly have a customer base. You could constantly be sending money to the rebels and whatever puppet regime you put up. And maybe after like a couple decades of just being a senseless playground of murder, maybe eventually they get their feet under them, they actually become a functional state again, and then we can attack them and go to war with them again. This is just the cycle that we've been in forever. I mean, this has been the case since we were arming Osama bin Laden to fight the Soviets. It never ends because we never end it, because they keep getting away with it, because they keep doing the same thing over and over, and then literally the exact same people do it again. It's crazy, but this is just happening, and nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. It's wild, but here we are. So Roman Goffman, currently serving as Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's military secretary, told the Israeli leader in planning discussions that the Iranian regime could be toppled, a view shared by the agency he set to lead, and one that proved overly optimistic. That's one way of putting it. Overly optimistic. Yeah. No, it was a lie. That's like saying the dealership that sold you a lemon, they were overly optimistic about the car's capabilities. Yeah, kinda. You could say that if you were a liar. Goffman is slated to assume the post in June for a 5-year term, replacing David Barnea, who also believed the war could topple the Islamic Republic. Are these guys also wrong? Isn't that crazy? Isn't it crazy that as the head of the most powerful intelligence agency in the entire world with access to the most exclusive information of anybody existing right now, somehow they were wrong and we were right? Like, how does that happen, you wonder? You gotta wonder how in the hell that could possibly happen. How were they wrong? How were they so bad at their job? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Masachi, yeah, and by the way, they're like, and the mission's not over until the Iranian leadership falls. Don't worry, it'll be a short mission. They'll fall immediately. Oops, they didn't. Well, we're in it for the long haul now, and we can't get out until the impossible mission is done. No, these are our enemies. No, these guys are our enemies. No, they're the ones that got us into this war and that have made us stay in this war and that are blackmailing Donald Trump or whatever they're doing to keep him in a state of just pathetic and utterly embarrassing subservience. They're the bad guys. They're our enemies. They're the ones destroying us and the world systematically. And we need to stand up to them and stop doing their bidding at the very least. And really, if we were smart, we'd have them all in chains. That's where the blackmail comes in, I guess. Trump says China agrees not to send Iran weapons, predicts Xi Jinping will give him a big fat hug. Okay, sure. I don't know, man. It's like, people like to equate Trump with historical figures like Winston Churchill. I don't remember a quote like this from Winston Churchill. We will fight in the hills, we'll fight in the streets, we will give them a big fat hug at the end of it all. Okay, cool. Just very cool. Trump has said that China has agreed not to send warships to Iran amid reports it plans to give Tehran new air defense systems, and he predicted Chinese leader Xi Jinping will give me a big fat hug when they meet next month. Okay, maybe. Yeah, maybe that's the case. I don't know. Mark Levin gave you a big fat hug last time we saw it. It looked incredibly uncomfortable. China is very happy that I'm permanently opening the Strait of Hormuz. Okay, so this was 6:46 a.m. today. We got to keep it up to the minute. Maybe we need a little tracker on the bottom of the screen. Is Trump saying the Strait of Hormuz is open? Then next to that, it can be a little sign saying the Strait of Hormuz is closed. So regardless of what Trump is saying at the time, it is still closed. And nothing about his flip-flopping about this has affected it whatsoever. Okay. The situation will never happen again. They've agreed not to send weapons to Iran. President Xi will give me a big fat hug when I get there in a few weeks. We are working together smartly and very well. Doesn't that beat fighting? But remember, we are very good at fighting if we have to, far better than anyone else. President DJT. Yeah, I don't know. I really feel like China is just laughing their butts off right now. There's like, yeah, well, we won't send weapons. Yeah, no problem, Trump. No, we're super scared of you. We're totally not going to send weapons. And we'll give you a big fat hug. That's right, Trump. You got it. While they just sit back and laugh knowing that their fertilizer is safe. They get it from coal. They get their urea from coal. They don't need to import it all because they're smart. Unlike us and everybody else, apparently.
What's this? Oh, I've got Power Plan. Oh, what's this? I've got Methyl Drive, the two ingredients in the Power Drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them. Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
I want to make a massive announcement right now. I mean, this is just bonker town. What it does is just... I feel 20 years younger. I'm not kidding you. Ultra Methylene Blue. Blue.
I know. Blue. I love it. This stuff works, man.
I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Ultra Methylene Blue. 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 I mean, this is just bonker town.
I know. I love it.
I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Ultra Methylene Blue. 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 I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Up.
This stuff works.
Get yours now at thealexjonesstore.com. It is just beyond spectacular. I'm holding in my hands two compounds that are guaranteed to change your life. T3, pure atomic iodine. Nobody else has it. It's next level. And Ultra Methylene Blue, medical grade methylene blue. These two products together supercharge the mitochondria, the cells, clean out the body, and are game changers. Iodine is essential, meaning you die without it. The UN admits that most people that have cognitive disabilities is because of lack of iodine. You add Ultra Methylene Blue to this, it supercharges everything. Ladies and gentlemen, T3 is now available. DallasTheStore.com, the very best iodine that we know of that exists. There may be better. We'll adopt that if we can. But this is the best for sale we found, and we have the best medical grade, Ultra Methylene Blue. Get yours now, right now. If you're a VIP member, for 50% off. Regular customers, 25% off. It funds the InfoWar, but more importantly, it is a game changer. If you don't take my advice and try this, you're insane. All you got to do is try it. You'll be blown away. Take action now. TheAlexJonesStore.com to get T3, now available, and Methylene Blue at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Bovine Colostrum Plus, a really incredible new product that's flying off the shelves. What if one simple scoop a day could strengthen your body's natural defenses at every single stage of life? This is Bovine Colostrum Plus, nature's very first superfood, now in its purest, most potent form. For teens and kids, Colostrum Plus delivers 4,000 milligrams of immune-boosting IgG antibodies and 20 grams of premium protein to power growth, crush colds before they start, and keep young athletes recovering faster and staying in the game. In your 20s and 30s, it rebuilds your gut barrier, sharpens focus, and helps you bounce back from tough workouts and late nights like you're still 21. Hitting 40, 50, and beyond? Well, Bovine Colostrum Plus fights back against age-related immune decline, supports healthy inflammation levels, and keeps your joints, skin, and energy feeling years younger. One scoop, 500 milligrams of soothing marshmallow root for your gut, 500 milligrams of lactoferrin, nature's ultimate defender, and zero junk. Get it today at thealexjonesstore.com.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.
The program leftists failed to silence. It's the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We're going to be talking a lot today about the dual topic of the Iran war and the failure of the Republican Party ahead of the midterms as basically favorability totally collapses. Scandal is ripping the party apart and nothing is getting done. And shockingly or not, I mean, I don't know, you might be shocked at this. This might be business as usual, but the Republicans have decided to react to this total collapse in support for their inability to get anything done by getting even less done, by actually deciding to fulfill less of their campaign promises. It literally doesn't make any sense. I don't know how they're coming to this conclusion. It's total madness. Donald Trump got elected in 2024 on a platform that was more extreme and farther to the right than he'd ever been before. He did not get elected. He did not build the once in a generational coalition that he did with MAHA and Elon Musk and Doge. And he built that by going farther to the right than ever before. He didn't enter the 2024 cycle saying, hey, you know, I've learned my lesson. We're going to, you know, we'll deport just the most criminal aliens, but the people that have been here for a while can stay. No, no, he went farther than he'd ever been before. He won with that promise. He did not fulfill that promise. Therefore, his support is cratering. They see the cratering support and they think, gosh, people don't like the deportations. We better stop them. Total madness. And again, total arbitrary application of political sentiment, public sentiment. Because if they cared about popularity, they wouldn't have gone to war with Iran, or they'd get out of it as quickly as possible. It doesn't matter in that case. In the case of Iran, what we're doing there is more important. It's more necessary. It doesn't matter what the people say. It's going to get done. But deportations, well, people don't like it, so we'll have to stop doing that. We cannot do that because the poll numbers are bad. They're worse for the Iran war, but we keep doing that. So it's not actually the excuse. That's not actually the reason it's happening. And again, we're just going to have to wait and see what the outcome of this, as U.S. farmers are strained as fertilizer costs surge in the war. And again, I say this is a dual topic because it's not necessarily like the Iran war is this thing where everything else is going great, and then because the Iran war happened, everybody's flipping out. The Iran war happening would actually not be that big of a deal if by this point we'd had 10 million deportations, inflation was down across the board. I mean, they could do a lot of things. Literally any of the deep state was arrested, a single one of them. FISA was undone. The voting system was secure. We've gotten nothing so far, more or less. And we go to war with Iran. So it's this combination. I think Tim Dillon hits the nail on the head when he breaks this down. Guys, y'all have the Tim Dillon video? And again, what I like about Tim Dillon, he's obviously kind of playing dumb. He's kind of like, he knows more than what he's saying, but he kind of puts on an act as if he's shocked and confused about what's going on. And I just, you know, it's just that's the comedy, the humor, it's the spoonful of sugar to help the medicine go down, the medicine being the truth of our situation. Here's Tim Dillon breaking down the kind of absurdity of our relationship with Israel over this Iran war. Let's watch.
I don't always want to be like down on Israel, but I got to be honest, 100 times in what, 10 minutes?
Yeah.
In a densely populated urban area, I'm really starting to get the feeling, and I'm just saying this, I'm starting to get the feeling that this country, Israel, is a little bit of a problem. I'm starting to get this nagging feeling that Israel doesn't really want this ceasefire. They don't want it to work. They don't want it to work. Take a look here. Explosions rock Beirut as Israel carries out its biggest attack. By the way, stop this for a minute. Israel claims in all of these buildings there are terrorists doing terrorist things. Like thinking, I don't know what that even means, but apparently there are terrorists everywhere talking about attacking Israel. And Israel has to kill everyone to make sure that none of these terrorists find a way to do it. So Israel just kind of like wholesale blowing up apartment complexes, because within that apartment complex, there are, I guess, terrorists. This is what all these brilliant people keep telling us. All the advocates of the Israeli strategy here, that there are terrorists in this apartment complex. So we just got to light it up. We just got to blow it up. And who's this? Absolute bombshell on Sky News. A Lebanese rescue worker completely dismantles the Israeli military narrative. He confirms the bombed area in Beirut was purely civilian with zero Hezbollah presence. Israel internationally targeted innocent children and the elderly. Here's the problem when you embrace this total war that Israel seems to be embracing. Their argument is we're going to kill everyone, and then some of those people will be terrorists. That's really their argument. Their argument is like, if we kill everyone, inevitably, some of the people will be terrorists. Or like, you know, whatever. Take our word for it. But we have to kill everyone just to make sure. Because anyone who's thinking about becoming a terrorist, or anyone who knows a terrorist, or who might grow up to be a terrorist, has to be eliminated. So they've taken this strategy, which, by the way, I've never even seen this in like 41 years of my life. I've never seen the brutality of this type of warfare. Now, I'm sure it's existed. I'm not an idiot. But this idea that you would just go in and bomb 100 targets in 10 minutes, and a lot of them are civilians, and you are massacring people, women and children. I mean, the blowback that Israel will get from this and that the United States will get from funding it is going to be insane. You're creating terrorists all over the world that are seeing this bloodshed, and it's going to radicalize them to commit acts of terror. You can't just indiscriminately kill civilians and not expect that people are going to be radicalized and driven to violence. And Israel doesn't want this ceasefire to last with Iran. They don't. They want the Iranian regime completely neutered. They want it to be a dysfunctional country. They want it to look like Gaza. They want it to at least be Syria, where you have either a puppet government, you have kind of a dysfunctional country. They don't want an Iranian regime that is stronger and more dedicated to getting nuclear weapons than they were, but that's what they're going to get. That's what they're going to get. Because it's pretty clear to everybody who's honest that we've lost. Our objectives in this war have not been met. We simply are walking away, and we should. But the only way to win is like 100,000 troops or a nuke. That's the only way to win. And there's people in the country that want a nuke used. And there's people that have argued for that at high levels, truly, that are saying, why don't you drop a nuke on Iran? And if we go after the Iranian infrastructure, their energy infrastructure, they're going to hit energy infrastructure in the Gulf. The price of oil is going to skyrocket. We're going to have a global energy crisis. So we've lost. There's nowhere to go. It's checkmate.
So again, just a sort of brilliant breakdown from Tim Dillon. And the question is, why would they do this? That's the real question. Not, you know, what is the goal, the stated goal? The stated goal is obviously not the real goal, because the actions are not commensurate with achieving the goal as stated. And yet we still pursue it. There's a very sort of obvious, deceptively sophisticated operation going on here. And I think once I lay it out, it'll be a little bit obvious. Right now, and for the last couple of years, there's been an intense drive for countries all over the world to adopt the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism. The definition of anti-Semitism from the International Holocaust Remembrance Association conflates criticism of Israel and anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. So that's it. Once you have that, the cycle is set up and it perpetuates on its own volition, because Israel acts insane, commits genocides, commits massacres, bombs apartment buildings full of innocent civilians, and that outrages people. So people speak out about that. People get angry about that. Now, that very reasonable and legitimate criticism of the brutal actions of a nation state is then transmuted through this definition into anti-Semitism. And so the worse Israel acts, the more people complain about it, the more people complain about Israel, the more you can say anti-Semitism is rising. The more you can say anti-Semitism is rising, the more money you can collect, the more you can put fear in the hearts of Jewish people and fear in the hearts of non-Jewish people and convince them to hand over more power, convince them to hand over more censorship because of the shocking rise in anti-Semitism that came about entirely because you redefined the word to mean criticism of a state that is acting as belligerent and objectionable as humanly possible. And the result of all of this is that all around the world, anti-Semitism laws are being passed on the basis of the IHRA and in connection with all of the other surveillance and censorship campaigns going on, like digital ID, mandatory ID to get on the internet, protecting people who are under 18, despite the fact that Europe isn't even really having children. They're passing all of these laws to protect the innocent children, not from, being assaulted by migrants, but from like seeing news about assaults by migrants. Because you have to cover up the consequences of your policy if you want the policy to continue and the outcome is negative. And so these are all from just the last, most of these are from the last day or so. But we do go back to like January for Australia. But all at the same time, Macron is to host a call with EU leaders on social media ban for minors. French President Emmanuel Macron will host a video call with other EU leaders and European Commissioner Ursula von der Leyen to push a coordinated approach to banning social media for minors, Macron's office said Tuesday. Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez and representatives of Italy, the Netherlands, and Ireland will attend the conference call along with others on Thursday, Macron's office said, adding that the final list of attendees will be announced later. The main goal is to act in a coordinated manner and push the European Commission, in the positive sense of the term, to move ahead at the same pace as member states, a presidential aide told reporters. So, again, we've talked about this endlessly. You do not need the government or big tech to determine whether or not your children get on the internet. That should be the responsibility of the parents. It's only when parents abandon that responsibility that suddenly you need daddy government to step in and dictate whether or not you can look at something. But that's obviously not the point. There are a million ways to get around it. Anybody capable of using a phone at this point should know how to download a VPN and get around, state restrictions. And obviously, if they wanted to, they could interdict and stop all sorts of horrible material from getting to children if that was the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is to simply have an excuse to demand digital ID. They just are using, it's just the most obvious thing in the world. They're using children and children's safety, which they have really gone out of their way to allow to be violated over and over and over again. I've used the example a billion times, but if you put an Alex Jones video on Facebook, they'll take it down before it's even fully uploaded. They have AI to detect the sound of Alex's voice or the image of his face, and they do not allow that type of material to be uploaded. Yet somehow, with the same system in place, there are NGOs out there monitoring this stuff that say there's like 100 million instances of child sex abuse material on Facebook in a single year. So they have the incredible AI systems that can identify and take down objectionable material, if by objectionable material you mean right-wing political content, but nothing else. So the point I'm making is that if they wanted to stop children being introduced to stuff, this would not be the way they'd do it. They're doing this because it simply gives them the excuse they need to say, hey, you got to prove you're over 18, meaning we need to connect your person biometrically to your digital identification. So now there's no anonymity on the internet, and they can see everything you're looking at, everything that you're saying. It just couldn't be more obvious where this is coming from. Okay, so all of the EU is getting together to do this. And of course, again, this is just the latest. The Digital Safety Act that they had a while ago was precursor to this. The digital ID program being run by Tony Blair's son, by the way, in collaboration with David Ellison, all being implemented at exactly the same time. Zelensky has now signed a law against anti-Semitism in Ukraine, up to 8 years in prison. You can go to prison for 8 years if you are, quote-unquote, anti-Semitic in Ukraine, this in the middle of a gigantic war that's gone on for years, being implemented by a dictator who should have been out of office years ago, but he refuses to hold elections. Ukraine has moved into a new phase in its legal response to anti-Semitism. On April 14th, Zelensky signed into law 2037-9, introducing criminal liability for anti-Semitic acts and creating a graduated scale of punishment from fines and restrictions on liberty to prison terms of up to 8 years. For Israeli readers, this is not merely a technical legal development. It's a moral and political signal at a time when anti-Semitism is again rising in many parts of the world and Jewish communities are living with renewed anxiety. Remember, because people don't like Israel killing children, therefore Jews have to be scared. They're trying to draw firmer legal boundaries. Anti-Semitism is no longer being addressed only through public condemnation or symbolic declaration. It's now being tied more directly to criminal responsibility. Thought crime, in other words. A elevated population above reproach and condemnation. Everybody else, fair game. Again, it's not easy to imagine. Anti-white laws, anti-Catholic law, you know, anti-Catholic speech laws or whatever. It would be obvious the instant those things were implemented that we could be considered living in some sort of theocratic country. If it was illegal to talk badly about a specific church or a specific religion, it'd be obvious, like, oh, they're the ones in charge. We live in a theocracy. So we live in increasingly a world Jewish theocracy that punishes you for noticing. Proposed anti-Semitism laws in France and Italy stir free speech debate. French and Italian lawmakers are due to vote on new laws defining anti-Semitism proposed in the wake of a surge in anti-Jewish incidents, but which critics say could be used to censure criticism of Israel and chill protest movements. The French law, which is scheduled to be debated on Thursday, proposes a sanction to implicitly justifying terrorism, calling for the destruction of a state recognized by France or comparison of Israel to the Nazis. Of course, there was a story yesterday from Haaretz, the Jewish newspaper, about how Jewish pre-state underground militia terrorist groups were actually in contact with Nazi Germany and working hand-in-hand with them as they aligned on Zionism. But that's illegal to know. You're not allowed to know that. It's anti-Semitic. French Parliament to vote on law that would widen the definition of anti-Semitism in France. It's exactly the same as here in America. First, you widen the definition to include criticism of Israel. Then you claim because of that, the rates are skyrocketing, meaning this is urgent. We don't have time to think about it or the negative consequences for free speech and expression down the road. Just do it. Do it now. Shut it down. Anti-Semitism now criminalized in Ukraine, punishable by up to 8 years in prison. Of course, America, free speech country, only country in the world with the First Amendment, is seeing that chipped away by Jewish groups here. Groups backing effort to amend California's anti-Semitism law respond to criticism. Jewish California had accused the California Faculty Association and Council on American Islamic Reactions are trying to gut the bill. So there's already a anti-Semitism law in California, again, based off of the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism. Wisconsin adopted an anti-Semitism definition into law. Critics say it could chill free speech. Missouri legislature passes bill targeting anti-Semitism in schools and colleges. Florida Senate approves the creation of a statewide anti-Semitism task force. So, you know, we'll have, I guess, you know, Jews running around making sure everybody says nice things about them. I don't know. Sounds like it's a flagrant violation of the First Amendment, if you ask me. Of course, Australia has already implemented many of these, as we've seen. They call it the J7, collection of the seven largest Jewish communities on earth. They get together and spent about a year lobbying the Australian government, desperately trying to get this updated version of anti-Semitism, the definition and the laws around speech, passed. And they couldn't get it passed until that attack on Bondi Beach, in which case, in the, you know, aftermath of that, they passed it through easily. And people have already been arrested for saying things like, you know, Israel has influence in Australia. We played video of a guy giving a speech where he said exactly that. He's now been arrested and charged and faces years in prison because of his statement of obvious fact. That's the real danger of what's being put forward here. Meanwhile, Kanye West is finding it impossible to tour through Europe, which is interesting because at this moment, somebody touring through Europe is the warlord president of Syria, who is literally in video and photo chopping people's heads off. So chopping people's heads off and waging pogroms against religious minorities in Syria, not enough to get you kicked out of Europe. Saying I'm going to go DEFCON on the Jews, you're not allowed anymore. You're not allowed. Kanye should have I don't know, chop somebody's head off, I guess. That would have been forgivable and understandable, but not merely acknowledging Jewish control in the media industry, which is then on display as they destroy Kanye's career and kick him out of the continent of Europe. At the Telegraph, support for Israel is now mandatory because you've got the legal implication, implementation of anti-Semitism laws where you can be arrested for violating them, or you have the sort of social pressure still at play where the Daily Telegraph, that's now been acquired by a German-based media giant, sent a letter to their journalist about how they have to be aligned on support for the Jewish state of Israel. And of course, you have things like Stop Anti-Semitism and the ADL here, which outside of the law will charge, convict, and punish you for thought crime using their influence over your life in order to stop you from getting a job or meeting somebody. Let's go to clip number 9 here, because this is, again, where we can see this manifesting in the real world, where people are just sort of assuming that anti-Semitism, like, is illegal, and they're acting on it, and it's kind of creating a terrifying circumstance. In fact, we're running out of time. I'm going to show that video in the first 5 minutes of the next hour, because I think it's important. I'm going to let the whole thing play. But we have seen, and there's video of, and I'm sure there's been a lot of other examples, but we have the video of the guy here in Texas who the sheriff's knocked on his door and said to him verbatim, "We want to talk to you about the things you've been saying online about the Jewish community." "Okay, what the hell are you talking about?" And in that case, the guy said, "Get the hell off my lawn. What are you talking about? That's not illegal. Go away." And they had to go away because it's not illegal. You can't say anything. Then you had the video of the sheriffs in Florida knocking on the woman's door, holding up a phone with her tweet on it saying, you know, "You might want to not tweet stuff out like this. It could be perceived as a call to violence." Now, what she tweeted out was condemnation of Randy Fine saying to kill all Palestinians and the Palestinian children deserve to starve to death. So Randy Fine, California, or Florida congressman, can say that all Palestinian children should die, that he likes the starvation campaign that Israel is carrying out. But then if you comment on that and saying that that's a sick perspective to have, Randy Fine, then you will be approached by the police who say that your statement is a call to violence. Your condemnation of his vicious call to violence is in fact a call to violence. That's how inverted and backwards everything is. Now we have more of this happening in Tennessee of all places. And of course, we played a couple weeks ago the sheriff from Wisconsin who arrested a guy because he did a meme with a guy with the Star of David on his head. So anti-Semitism and laws against it is the biggest threat at this moment to free speech, not just here in America, but around the world. It's being implemented in a systematic and universal process that we have to prevent.
I know you're the big health guy. You're way better shape than I am. Don't kick my ass. I've seen you working out with the Liver King. You say you've taken methylene before. I want you to take our medical grade. Take starting meds to kick in. So good for your body. I'd like you to drink this, Jay. You said earlier, what? I appreciate it. I want to get your true review. If it doesn't work, tell me. Here it is, brother.
He's cheers.
Looks just like the stuff from Dune, the water of life. He's drinking the juice of a strangled, drowned sandworm right now. Baron Harkonnen is not happy. We're going to see what happens.
20 minutes later.
I feel like my brain is clearer and working faster. It feels like my brain and my energy have had the accelerator hit on them. I felt it in my brain and my energy.
Well,
I like it. I'm going to get me some before I leave.
We're going to give you a couple bottles of it, bro. We love it. It's amazing. Get yours now. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Our medical grade USP Ultra Methylene Blue, exclusively at TheAlexJonesStore.com, has taken the country by storm. You've seen the rave reviews. All of our guests that have taken it have been blown away. Zen, clarity, focus, like a fog has lifted. It's not a stimulant, but it feels like one with no letdown. But the best part is it's so good for your cells, so good for your mitochondria. It's incredible. Now we have it in sealed capsules with organic vitamin C to supercharge it as well. Get a 1 month supply so you can travel with it. Talk to your physicians before you take it because it's very, very powerful. It can interact with some drugs. But after you've done your research, get your ultramethylene blue either in liquid or now in capsules exclusively at TheAlexJonesStore.com, and it funds our operations. And if you subscribe, you can lock in 50% off right now on all future orders and cancel anytime. Take action now at TheAlexJonesStore.com. Become a subscriber and lock in 50% off on top of the already incredible savings. TheAlexJonesStore.com is the destination of health, liberty, and freedom.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Second hour of the Alex Jones Show is on. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I'll be joined shortly by Dinesh D'Souza. We'll get into all sorts of stuff, probably starting with what's going on with the Republican Party and whether it's even possible to save the midterms at this point, what needs to be done to achieve that. But I want to go to this video. I think this is important because this is happening sort of an increasing rate around America. And it's very troubling to see the American people sort of fall into this false dichotomy. Not even a false dichotomy necessarily, just an inversion of reality where they are supporting restrictions to free speech because they think that it's defending free speech. There's a very weird sort of inverted censorship going on. And this is how it's actually affecting the American people. Let's go to clip number 9 here. This is an American in Tennessee saying he was followed by police for looking up articles on a library computer. Let's watch.
So I just had the police called on me at the Spring Hill, Tennessee library for printing out articles about the IDF committing genocide and pedophilia. Yeah, I'm having trouble believing what just happened to me right now. So here's the story time as quick as I possibly can. So my printer broke, and so I went to Spring Hill, Tennessee's library, and I didn't know how to do everything, so I was asking for help. And the librarian saw that I was printing out articles about genocide and how the ITF is raping Palestinian prisoners, how they snipe babies, you know, from reputable news. Right here. This is it. See? These articles. Well, I guess she called the police about it because as I was leaving, a cop was coming in. I went to my car and started pulling out. And as I pulled out, the cop jumped in front of me and said this.
Allie? What's going on? Happy?
What's going on?
What do you
mean? I said you were sweating profusely. What's going on with you?
I was trying to print some things because I need to get to my dogs. What do you mean?
Man, what?
Yes. The police officer stopped me because he said he got a call that I was sweating profusely or something. Whatever nonsense he's making up to try to stop me and say there's something wrong with me, so he's concerned. Unfortunately, I must have hit pause, but immediately after this happened, I asked him, what crime did I commit? Am I being detained? He said no. I left. As I left, I saw him get on his radio. And as I pull out, two cruisers get behind me and follow me all the way home. What the fuck, Spring Hill, Tennessee? We can't go to a library and print things out about the terrorist organization, the ITF, without Zionists calling the police? This is insane. This needs to end. We need to be able to call out pedophilia and genocide without the police being called because we're doing it. It is fucking upside down and backwards. Fuck Israel and free Palestine.
All right. I gotta say, who has that reaction? Who sees somebody printing stuff out, starts freaking out, and calls the police? Not an American. An American would never do that type of thing. You might talk to them. You might have a conversation with them. You might say, what is this? You know, I've got some other information you might be interested in. But to call the police out of fear, this is what is being implanted in people's minds. That if you see somebody that opposes the secular nation state of Israel and their activities in war, that you are somehow a dangerous, insane person that needs to be locked away. That is such a crazy mindset for people to have personally adopted. This isn't being forced on anybody. This is them basically inculcating and taking unto themselves this position as school marm and hall monitor, and I'm sick of it. It's not American. It's un-American. It's anti-free speech, and I, for one, won't stand for it. More on the other side with Dinesh D'Souza. Go nowhere.
What's this? Oh, I've got Power Plant. Oh, what's this? I've got Methyl Drive, the two ingredients in the Power Drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them.
Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
The answer to 1984 is 1776. You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today. It is the second hour here on this live broadcast for Wednesday, the 15th of April, 2026. I'm very happy to welcome my guest, Dinesh D'Souza. He, of course, is an author, filmmaker, and host of the weekly show, Dinesh. He's also come out with a new article called The Real Estate President, Iran Nukes, and Leverage, attempting, I guess, to make sense of Trump's strategy and the way he approaches geopolitical problems so the rest of us can understand it. Welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
The pleasure is mine. Tell us about your new article and what we're going to do here, because it seems to me like the Republicans have sort of abandoned the coalition that we built to get Trump in 2024. I'm very worried about the midterms. It doesn't look like it's going to go our way, and it doesn't look like the Republicans are doing anything to rectify that. How do we solve this? What do we do? We only have a couple months here, Dinesh.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about the midterms. I'd like to start by talking a little bit about making sense of Trump, because it is so customary for us, whether on the right, even on the left, to try to understand Trump ideologically. Is Trump an isolationist? Is he an interventionist? If he's an interventionist, what kind of an interventionist is he? And so on. And I argue that this is the wrong way to look at Trump completely. Trump can be understood more as a real estate man, a real estate president. Now, remember that a lot of people who voted for Trump going back to 2016 said, you know, we want a businessman. We don't want a politician. And I'm saying that's what you got. You actually got a business guy, but not any kind of a business guy, right? Trump is not a tech mogul. Trump is a builder. He's a guy who stands in the construction lot. He puts up tall buildings, he evaluates property, and my argument is that he looks at America as a kind of prize piece of real estate, with all the things in America as representing the assets, the sort of facilities of that real estate. He views the world as a large plot of land, and he essentially looks at the presidency as protecting the interests of sort of America Inc. or America LLC, projecting our influence, our power, trying to acquire more assets, trying to bring foreign investment over here, trying to disrupt the people who are messing with the kind of free flow of commerce and goods and services in the lanes, the real estate lanes of the world, which are of course the oceans as well as the air as well as land. So if you look at Trump in this way, a lot of the things that he says and does that otherwise seem bizarre now begin to make sense.
Interesting. So how would that relate to something like the Iran wars? I get what you're saying, and you know that is sort of what we liked about Trump, but obviously there's some major differences between a land deal or a business and the country. We can't, you know, declare bankruptcy and move on from our country, right? There's some pretty key differences that make a strategy that would apply to business or real estate totally non-functional when it comes to running a country. So how would this apply to something like the Iran wars? This is one that I cannot wrap my mind around. I cannot make sense of Trump's motivation here. Seems like it's ever changing and we're not getting what we said we were going to get. So, you know, how would this view help us make sense of that?
Well, I think the way Trump looks at it, he certainly doesn't see it as a war for democracy. He's not trying to create direct kind of regime change in Iran. I think the way he looks at it is that there are good Muslims and bad Muslims. Now, who are the good Muslims? Well, they're the people, by and large, who are trying to modernize the Middle East. And by modernize, I mean, quite simply, to increase the real estate value of the region, which is Trump's kind of compass. Right. Trump even looks at the rubble in Gaza and he goes, hey, man, you know, I see some like tall buildings. I see some coffee shops. You know, he doesn't say this, but maybe a Trump hotel. So Trump is looking at this as this is wasted land when it's all rubble. And he likes places like the United Arab Emirates or even Saudi Arabia, because those countries are thinking far more about artificial intelligence and robotics. And they're thinking about, let's say, the Quran. Now, who does Trump not like? Well, he doesn't like the 7th century Muslims, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, the Iranian mullahs. Why? Because those people are all about taking a sort of fanatical ideology and using it to disrupt the free flow of commerce and trade and good relations in the region. I mean, a lot of Muslim countries are perfectly happy to do business with Israel, but not Iran. So Trump is like, these people are like a menace. You know, they're like, they're tormenting the free flow of goods and services in the world. We have to stop them. So when the Iranians go, listen, you know, we're going to encircle the Straits of Hormuz. We're going to, you know, block it. Trump goes, okay, well, you block it and we'll block you. We'll make another circle around you. And that's a way of cordoning off your power and influence. So for Trump, it's really connected to energy. It's connected to resources. It's connected to the price of oil in the global markets. So I think here's a guy who sees America's foreign and domestic policy as connected, as really being the same thing. All of it aimed at enhancing the property value. And by property value, I mean the lives of the people, their homes, their assets here in the United States. Ultimately, that's what Trump means by America first.
I guess I just don't understand how this benefits us. And do you think that maybe view is why he's seems to be a little bit incapable of grasping the worldview of somebody that doesn't think like that? In other words, he might be seeing this as a real estate deal and these people aren't, you know, developing it to the maximum potential, which would make sense from his point of view. But they're sitting there going, yeah, but it's my home and I don't want to give it up. You know, that's sort of an incompatible worldview. And I've heard Trump say this in interviews where he's talking about people in Lebanon. He's like, I don't know why they stay there. They're getting bombed. And it's like, well, it's because he seems not willing to, you know, understand the mindset of people in Iran are like, we'd rather live in rubble and not be subject to you in Israel than be in a 5-star hotel and feel like slaves. I mean, is there something in Trump's worldview that makes it, you know, incompatible with getting to peace with these people?
Well, I think this stuff is really complicated because I think that the mullahs in Iran are not devoted to Iran as kind of their little piece of home. I think that they're devoted primarily to Islam. Now, who's my source of this? They are. They'll even say, they go, we don't care about Iran. We care about Islam. We are part of the Islamic project. I mean, Khomeini never saw himself primarily as an Iranian. Now, we in the West often identify more with our home country than we do, for example, with our religion. But that is not the case for these radical Muslims. Islam comes first. Their country, their tribe, if anything comes second, third, maybe fourth. So it's the Islamic project that we're dealing with here. But even there, like I say, Trump is not like, I'm against the Islamic project. Trump is like, there are two Islamic projects. There's the Islamic modernization project. I like that one. And then there's the Islamic, like, death cult. I don't like that one. So I think Trump here is, you know, and it's very difficult to talk about Trump, you know, because you can't change Trump, right? Trump, we know, looking back at him a decade, two decades, three decades, this is a guy who has been shaped on the construction lot. This is a guy who's been shaped by New York City. He has a brash style. He can't be anything other than he is. So we need to assess who he is, what he's doing, and then ask ourselves, is this so bad? Because look, who are the most successful people in the world right now? Which is the country that has been coming up the fastest? China. China's transactional exactly like Trump. China's not ideological. You know, China goes to Africa and, you know, the United States for many years was like, you Africans need to join with us because, you know, we believe in democracy, you believe in democracy. The Chinese are like, forget about that. We'll give you $500 million to build a port. You'll then become dependent on us, and that's because we have financial leverage over you. So what I'm saying is, this is the language that Trump speaks. This is the language that he understands. It's the language of transactional, dealing with people in the world as merchants and traders, traders, and not dealing with people as ideologues.
Well, sure, but doesn't that clash with the idea that he's against this radical form of Islam? Because it seems to me like the Saudi Arabian form of Islam is a little bit more radical. It seems to me like Syria was previously governed by a guy who'd been to Western universities. Now it's being governed by a former Al-Qaeda leader, and it's become total chaos. I mean, Iran, for, you know, all of its religious inclinations, was a fairly modern country, right? I mean, it's as modern as anywhere else in the area. So it seems like that can't be the delineation. It seems like it's more like who's willing to play ball with Israel, who's willing to make deals with Israel. That seems to be the dividing line between whether or not they're on the good side or the bad side when it comes to Trump's view.
I don't think that's it at all. I think that the way Trump sees it, the value of Israel is this. They live in that bad neighborhood. And because they live over there, they actually understand it better than we do. You know, it's kind of like some guy in the suburbs who is going to the city, but he's got a friend who lives like on 126th Street in New York. That guy actually knows much better where the gangs are, what alley to avoid, because he lives there. And so the Israelis are actually, they've taken the measure of radical Islam. They have detailed knowledge down to the names of people and where they live and who their uncle is and who they're married to and what they care about and what kind of pager they use. America can't even get close to that kind of specificity. So I think Trump thinks that the Israelis are useful because they inhabit that bad neighborhood and their intelligence on the ground is much better than ours.
But it's not perfect, right? I mean, they were wrong about the regime falling, right? That's what's been revealed recently with the new Mossad chief, basically the new Mossad chief and the old chief, current one, David Barnea, both sort of promised that the regime would fall immediately. We know that Netanyahu was promised by Mossad that they'd be able to sort of overthrow the regime through the color revolutions they were launching. But, I mean, both of those failed. So now, as a consequence of trusting the Israeli intelligence, we're in a bit of a quagmire, right? So, I mean, I don't think our reliance or adherence to Israeli intelligence has been beneficial to us. It seems like the thing that's directly gotten into a mess that we seem incapable of extricating ourselves from.
Look, Iran is a closed society, and they have been since 1979, as you know. The idea of getting perfect intelligence in a place like that, extremely difficult. I mean, to get an idea of how bad our intelligence is, the United States had no idea the Soviet Union was about to collapse. I mean, think about that. We've been studying the Soviet Union minutely, using massive resources for half a century. And we had no idea that the whole thing was about to collapse between 1989 and 1992. So I don't disagree that Israel's intelligence is probably quite imperfect. The second thing I want to say is that if you're not going to put boots on the ground, you're not going to go door to door, you are going to try to somehow topple a society from the outside, you're going to need to rely on the Iranian people at home to do it. They have to sort of seize control of their own country. Now, can they do it? Yes. I mean, we've seen it happen. Look at the end of the Cold War. I saw with my own eyes the people of Poland, the Czechs, the Romanians. I mean, they went into the presidential palace. They yanked Ceausescu out of his office. I mean, these guys took control of their own country. So I argue that in the end, we cannot fight for other people's freedom. They've got to take it themselves. We can sort of create the conditions for it, but the Iranian people need to do it. Are they capable of doing it? Yes. Are they capable of ruling their own country? Yes, because they did it before. So you yourself said that we have seen an Iran that is peaceful, that's prosperous, that's pro-American, and obviously that would be of great value to us if we could get that again. But we're not willing to put boots on the ground to achieve that, and I agree with this. So if Israel wants to go do that, they can be our guest and go ahead. I think this is a case where U.S. interests and Israeli interests diverge.
Okay, but we seem to be serving Israeli interests, because I don't understand how our interest was really served by this at all. Obviously, boots on the ground would be necessary, but none of the groundwork was done. I mean, the reason I bring up the Israeli intelligence being wrong is because that was the argument as to why we need to support them. But if they're providing us false or faulty intelligence, then that sort of does away with their value as being the knowledgeable ones in that neighborhood, right? I mean, if we're going to be trusting them for our intelligence, it needs to be trustworthy.
I mean, you're using such a peculiar standard to measure this war, right? Because look at this. Israel is a country of what? 10 to 12 million people. Iran, 90 million. Iran has massive resources. They're an oil-rich country. They claim at least the moral support of 2 billion Muslims around the world. They have tentacles that stretch far and wide. So for a country like Israel to be able to pummel Iran is quite remarkable, quite stunning, really. And for the United States to get into this, call it a war, call it a military expedition, whatever you want to call it, with so little loss of life and being able to essentially debilitate an entire powerful country that's been a menace for 50 years, I mean, this to me is a spectacular success. I mean, look at any other war, right? In the Civil War, if the North lost 3,500 people and Robert E. Lee lost 2,500, this would be a massive victory for the South, because we only lost 2,500 and they lost 3,500. Here we have Iran taking massive defeats, and the United States is losing virtually nothing. And we know, like, one missile comes through and like four guys are hurt in, the outskirts of Jerusalem, and it's like, oh wow, Iran is really striking back. This is not what I call striking back. This is like a Monty Python skit in which the guy has no arms and legs and is still yelling and screaming, and we're pretending like the fight is still really going on. No, this is a remarkable case of the United States and Israel having taken, I think, a powerful country, Iran. And by the way, it's really funny to see it's the Saudis and even the Qataris and certainly the United Arab Emirates all cheering from the sidelines. They're even lobbying America to do more. Apparently, the Saudi prince, Mohammed bin Sultan, has been telling Trump, you need to go all the way. So this is a case where, you know, I might have worried if all the Muslims were kind of coming up against us in a united form, but they're not doing that. Many of them are really happy to see Iran go down.
See, this is where I'm confused, because I've got headlines saying the exact opposite. Saudi Arabia pressures Trump to scale back war in Iran. Mohammed bin Salman wants the U.S. president to lift quarantine of Iranian ports, say diplomats. Like, this is the thing. It seems like there are not two sort of clearly defined sides. It seems like everybody's being pressured by everybody else. I mean, obviously it would be impressive if little tiny Israel had taken on Iran by itself, but, you know, they're incapable of doing anything without our help. They can't even bomb Iran without refueling with American, you know, air tankers. So, you know, I'm not that impressed by Israel being able to, you know, act sort of insane, knowing that America is the shield to protect them from retaliation as much as we can. So, yeah, well, I mean, I cannot see the victory in any of this. I mean, obviously the fight is still going on because the Strait of Hormuz is still closed, right? And there's been no agreement. I mean, they've spent 2.5 years bombing Gaza into rubble. Hamas is still holding military parades. So obviously an air campaign is insufficient for any meaningful change, but we're not going to send ground troops in there. Israel doesn't have the ground troops. They don't even have the ground troops to take over the parts of Lebanon they've depopulated. So, I mean, this just seems like an abysmal failure on every side, and that Trump's just trying to, you know, save face by putting a good spin on it. I really don't see the victory we've achieved here.
Well, if you start with Gaza, you know, you essentially had in Gaza the equivalent of a two-state solution, right? Because Gaza had elections in the early 2000s, Hamas came to power. They essentially turned Gaza into this armed camp. And yes, you can expect that when Hamas has autonomy over Gaza, over 25 years, they're going to build tunnels, they're going to create essentially fortifications in Gaza. They're able to hide these hostages, even though in theory the hostages are inside of Israel. The Israelis can't find them.
Well, you can do a lot of tunnel digging with $35 million a month provided by Netanyahu.
Yes. I mean, I think that going back to Sharon, the view in Israel was, okay, let's give these people essentially a part of the country to call their own, and let's see what they do with it. And what they did with it is made it a launching pad on October 7th for an attack. Now, if anyone had done that to you or me, coming, let's say, from a hostile neighborhood, we would have retaliated exactly the same way. Now, are we going to solve the problem? No, because, you know, ultimately, I think the problem is in the minds of the people, right? In other words, if you have a massive educational indoctrination program through the schools, you know, you want to be a martyr, you get money for being a suicide bomber, jihad is your goal in life, we prefer death to life. I mean, if this is what you teach the children year upon year upon year, yeah, you're ultimately going to create a festering society. And it's very difficult to solve that problem in the long term. So I don't have any illusions that this can be easily resolved just by bombing buildings or something. No, you can't do that. But you still do have to retaliate when they attack you first.
Well, you know, all that, you know, is just to say that obviously you can't overthrow a regime through a bombing campaign. So what I meant by bringing up Gaza was just that it sort of shows you that what we're doing in Iran is just utterly asinine. It can never work. It will never work. So why are we pursuing it, I guess, is my question.
Well, let me ask you this. How do you think the regime fell in 1979? If according to you, it's impossible to overthrow a regime, there was an Iranian revolution, right? The Shah abdicated. The mullahs were able to overthrow him with actually quite a minimum of force. So why is it the case that they are now invincible? It's impossible to overthrow them. I think you're presuming they have massive support among the Iranian people. Why do you presume these things?
Well, I didn't say it's impossible for regimes to change. I said it's impossible for us to effectively change a regime using the tactics we're now using. In other words, you can't airstrike your way to regime change. That has never happened. It happened in 1979 because they had popular support to wage an uprising. But we didn't have
exactly
popular support,
so
this time, despite all of the attempts
to
generate it.
Let's assume that the Iranian revolution after 50 years is relatively unpopular, it certainly has its advocates, right? I mean, all totalitarian regimes have advocates. There were plenty of advocates of the old Soviet Union. The Chavistas, of course, support socialism in Venezuela. And there are plenty of people who support the mullahs and benefit from the power structure of the regime. However, it seems like after 50 years that this Islamic indoctrination project in Iran has not been all that successful. And there is popular resistance to it. Now, the popular resistance is unarmed, whereas the regime is armed. And so external pulverization of the regime certainly can produce an internal popular uprising to overthrow the regime. I mean, a really good example is this. The United States in World War II, in the early years of World War II, pulverized Mussolini's Italy. And it was the Italians who revolted. They're the ones who actually grabbed Mussolini. They're the ones who actually killed him. They're the ones who overthrew fascism and then switched their allegiance from the Nazis to the West. But they did that because the Allies were able to weaken the military power of Mussolini's Italy. And so similarly here, I agree. I don't think that we in America can bring about regime change, but what we can do is create the conditions favorable to it and let the Iranians finish the job.
Isn't that what we tried to do? I mean, isn't that what has failed? And isn't that why we're in the situation we're in? I mean, it's a nice thought, but it didn't happen. I mean, Mossad went in there and armed the rebels and it didn't work.
Well, I mean, this is an expedition that is what, a few weeks old. I would say it has made massive successes already. No, has it succeeded in overthrowing the regime? I think it's fair to say that Trump never articulated that as the goal. Trump never said we're going to keep going until we get rid of the mullahs. Maybe he secretly hoped that would happen, but it's one thing to hope that something will happen, and it's another thing as to what your actual military objectives are. And I think our military objectives were stated pretty clearly. And that
is... Well, they've changed a little bit. Hold on. We'll be right back. Dinesh D'Souza is my guest. Don't go anywhere.
I know you're the big health guy. You're way better shape than I am. Don't kick my ass. I've seen you working out with the Liver King. You say you've taken methylene before. I want you to take our medical grade. The next 30 minutes kick in. So good for your body. I'd like you to drink this, Jay. You said earlier, what? I appreciate it. I want to get your true review. If it doesn't work, tell me. Here it is, brother.
Cheers.
Looks just like the stuff from Dune, the water of life. He's drinking the juice of a strangled, drowned sandworm right now. Baron Harkonnen is not happy. We're going to see what happens.
20 minutes later.
I feel like my brain is clearer and working faster. It feels like my brain and my energy have had the accelerator hit on them. I felt it in my brain and my energy.
Well,
I like it. I'm going to get me some before I leave.
We're going to give you a couple bottles of it, bro. We love it. It's amazing. Get yours now, thealexjonesstore.com.
I've been an oil field for as long as I've been an info warrior, 18 years. And Texan, born and raised, so I know, like, knives like you do. And I finally broke down and ordered one. I got the neon orange, and I'm blown away. I've had Benchmark knives that are easily $400. Had them for a year, lost them. This thing has the same feel, same quality, same, I mean, everything about it. I haven't had a knife stay this sharp in a long time, and I'm, like, horrible with equipment. I'm, like, very abusive with knives at work every day. I'm extremely impressed. I'm very impressed. So anybody out there listening, who knows there's a knife, comes back in stock, get one. You know, any of them. I want to get the ring knife when it comes back out. Other than that, I'll join all the supplements and,
Yeah, particularly the pocket knives, the folding knives, the flip knives are super high quality at incredibly low prices. I mean, these same knives sell in stores all day for like $80, or sold for like $40. We'll be right back.
Bovine Colostrum Plus, a really incredible new product that's flying off the shelves. What if one simple scoop a day could strengthen your body's natural defenses at every single stage of life? This is Bovine Colostrum Plus, nature's very first superfood, now in its purest, most potent form. For teens and kids, Colostrum Plus delivers 4,000 milligrams of immune-boosting IgG antibodies and 20 grams of premium protein to power growth, crush colds before they start, and keep young athletes recovering faster and staying in the game. In your 20s and 30s, it rebuilds your gut barrier, sharpens focus, and helps you bounce back from tough workouts and late nights like you're still 21. Hitting 40, 50, and beyond? Well, Bovine Colostrum Plus fights back against age-related immune decline, supports healthy inflammation levels, and keeps your joints, skin, and energy feeling years younger. One scoop, 500 milligrams of soothing marshmallow root for your gut, 500 milligrams of lactoferrin, nature's ultimate defender, and zero junk. Get it today at thealexjonesstore.com.
Hey, the Alex Jones app, AJN Live, is now the number one app in the world. That's right, you heard me. We're number one. And this is pissing off the Democrats in the deep state big time. They're doing everything they can to shut us down, and now here we are dominating the Apple Store.
Smells like victory.
We just launched the app less than 2 days ago, and we're already the number one news app in the world. And we'd like to keep it that way, so if you haven't done so yet, now's your chance. Go to alexjonesapp.com and download the app and tell the globalists to go f*** themselves.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. Discover trends and global developments years before they happen, right here on The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. My guest is Dinesh D'Souza, author, filmmaker, and host of the weekly show, Dinesh. And I know you only had 30 minutes with us, but thank you for staying a few more minutes because you kind of got cut off there halfway through a question, or through an answer, rather. If you want to finish up your thoughts there, because we got cut off by the commercial break, then I got one more question about how this relates to American domestic politics. But was there anything you wanted to say there before we got cut off?
Yeah, although the United States has a lot of oil and a lot of natural gas, and one of the paradoxical effects of shutting down the Strait of Hormuz and blocking oil traffic in that region is lots of other people who are buying oil from the Middle East are now dependent on buying oil from either Venezuela or from us. And actually, Venezuela and America are now essentially collaborating. So it puts the United States in a very powerful position in the global oil market. Now, I do think that Trump needs to be thinking about closing this out and getting out, precisely because of what you said earlier about the midterms. Ultimately, midterms are decided, as elections are decided generally, by domestic issues. We would like to see oil prices continue to drop. We would like to see a big boost in global markets. We would like to see some prosperity at home. We want to see the effects of the Trump tax cuts kicking in. I'd like to see an unleashing of the technology of robotics and AI. In other words, there's a lot of good stuff coming down the pike, but some of it may not come fast enough to help us in the midterms. And so I think the administration needs to move its eye from the foreign policy sector more toward the domestic sector, deliver on some of the promises that they haven't delivered on. Mass deportations, we haven't had enough. Indictments of prominent Democrats, we haven't had enough. So there are things that Trump needs to do on the domestic front. I think some of the dissatisfaction with Trump internationally is coming from the sense of frustration that he hasn't done enough at home. And so I think he should focus his attention there in the next several months.
Yeah, I completely agree. Well, then you've answered my question, because that was my question is, you know, if prolonging this war ends up losing us the midterms, because this is obviously a major issue. I mean, we just saw yesterday J.D. Vance had an event. He's getting heckled by people at a TPUSA event about Israel. I mean, this is what's on people's minds, and they're really not happy. And, it's not just that it's the Iran war. It's that we're doing this while it feels like not a lot is getting done at home. So, yeah, my question was, would it be worth it to keep this going if it meant that we lost midterms? It seems like you've answered that. Well, go ahead.
It's not worth it. I agree with that. I don't think that we should sacrifice the midterms on the altar of the Iran war. I think that's what you're getting at. And yeah. I would say no. But I think that we can conclude this in a very successful way. We already have a lot to show for it. And I do think that we have severely weakened Iran as a power in the region and also as an international menace. And I also agree with you, and I think this is really where MAGA can come together, is I don't think that these are radical differences. There are differences of emphasis. There are differences on the, you know, what is the role that Israel is playing in this conflict. I think it's not as big as people think it is, and it's certainly not the case that the Israeli tail is wagging the American dog. But I do agree that I think that domestic issues are paramount.
Yeah, and I think it's, whether or not it's the truth, I think there's a lot of evidence to that. And that's just, I think the outrage that people feel is that we really feel like we're up against the wall here. We really feel like the sort of the deadline for fixing America is rapidly approaching. And we're soon going to be past, beyond the point of no return. And so sort of the frustration that we're going to war with Iran, seemingly at the behest of Israel, according to, a lot of statements at the beginning. It's that frustration magnified by the fact that we feel like we're losing our last chance to rescue this country, and things are really urgent right now. So but it sounds like we agree on that. It sounds like we agree on the midterms at least, and that if this Iran war is putting that in jeopardy, there are better things to focus on. So I'm glad we agree on this. I was afraid this was going to be contentious, but I think we're more aligned than not.
I think for sure. Look, I think what's happened is that part of the frustration of a lot of young people in particular is that this country seems to be putting everybody else at the top of the list and them at the very bottom of the list. And some of the hostility to Israel doesn't even come out of Israel per se. It's that this is part of a pattern. Like, we've seen this in many other incarnations, and this is just the latest expression of some other foreign country, some elite, some pressure group is going to get priority. Their interests are paramount. My interests don't really matter. I do think that the whole Trump movement is aimed at convincing this significant part of the population, no, I'm here as the president to protect your interests. It's very important that Trump and the Republicans convey this message in the next several months.
Absolutely. I mean, that's why he got elected in the first place, because we are sick of this type of activity going on in our federal government. And that's where the sense of betrayal comes in, because it's like, we sent you to not do this, and here you are seemingly doing it. And of course, I got more blame to throw at the Republican Party. I'm not even that mad at Trump. I'm mad at the Republican Party even more so, because I feel like they've really failed in all of this. But I know you got to go. We could talk forever. Thank you so much for being with us, Dinesh D'Souza. Where can people find your latest article, The Real Estate President, Iran Nukes and Leverage, Trump's Foreign Policy Confuses the Left and Right, because we expect him to be ideological. Where can people find this article?
You can actually read it on my Substack. It's DineshDeSouza.substack.com. And then just follow me on X at Dinesh D'Souza. I post my weekly show every Monday on X and also on Rumble and YouTube.
Well, thank you very much, sir, for joining us and giving us a little extra of your time.
Hey, always a pleasure.
All right. Thanks, sir. All right, folks. We're gonna move on a little bit, but I do want to tell you right now at thealexjonesstore.com, you can get CMOS and Shilajit together. It's a special offer. When you subscribe to the CMOS capsules, which are one of my favorite products that we have, CMOS and Shilajit, I mean, these two are like my everyday. I usually do the gummies though, because it feels like a treat. But if you order them for delivery every month, you get your first month absolutely free. Or if you subscribe for the Shilajit gummies, you get the first month of CMOS capsules absolutely free. Okay. Oh, I get it. So if you subscribe to CMOS capsules, you get Shilajit free. If you subscribe to Shilajit, you get CMOS free. So it's your chance to get both products working together without paying full price. But this is a very limited time offer. CMOS is Irish CMOS. It's loaded with essential minerals your body needs for daily wellness, natural vitality, and overall support. Shilajit is a powerful natural compound used to support energy, stamina, performance, and recovery. And I always say, I mean, these two products are like literal magic. Like when you hear about how they are developed and how they were discovered, it's straight up something you'd hear in like Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter or something. Shilajit just spontaneously emerges out of mountain peaks. It's crazy. The Altai Mountains, the Himalaya Mountains, just disgorges this sort of tar, and the people who lived around it would notice that monkeys would eat it and be really energetic and like be running around. And so they discovered that this stuff is superfood, and it's incredibly powerfully packed with nutrients, and it's just like the best nutritional substance on earth, but it's got to be sourced the right way, and then it has to be filtered the right way. So we have the best filtering to make sure there's no heavy metals, there's no contaminants, there's no nothing. It's just the pure God-given manna from heaven, basically. Like, again, spontaneously emerges in mountain peaks. What more could you want? But of course, it's not just where and how it's created by God without explanation. It's the incredible power that it has. It's been recognized for centuries for the people in these areas. They've eaten it. We've just taken this natural compound, filtered it, purified it, made it so that's totally healthy, just the healthy stuff. But we take advantage of this just incredible spontaneously created substance, which is very similar to the Irish sea moss. The Irish sea moss, during the Irish famine, people were starving and sort of out of desperation. They're like, let's eat the sea moss. Let's see if that, and it turns out it's a superfood. It turns out something about the North Irish Sea creates this sea moss that is a superfood. That is like everything you could possibly need. It's actually saved tons of lives. During the Irish famine, they realized, well, there's this incredibly nutritious plant just spontaneously created in the ocean, washing up on shore. So again, we take it, we scrub it down, we filter out any, impurities or imperfections and deliver to you just this God-given superfood magical potion. That's just incredible. And you'll feel the difference. Shilajit gummies and CMOS capsules. You can get them together for extra discount today at thealexjonesstore.com. And of course, you're going to want to get any InfoWars branded merchandise now while you still can, since we will not be able to sell you that logo for much longer. Of course, the T3 iodine is incredible as well. Lots of great stuff. TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. And now we'll move on from the Iran stuff, even though I feel like a lot of this relates to it. But there's also a lot of American news to get into. And I'm always a little bit torn about these things because, for one thing, ignorance is bliss. And I'd rather not have to tell you about some of this stuff. Some of this stuff is just horrifying. And I guess if it was my goal just to, I don't know, get clicks or tantalize you or whatever, then I could just show you gruesome, horrifying videos all day, every day. Maybe that would work. I'm not really interested in that unless it goes along with some greater topic, right? Unless it is indicative of a wider trend that's occurring. Well, it's kind of hard to tell when that trend begins, right? If you've got a story today about an instance of something happening, and then that same thing happens next week, and then it happens 3 weeks, it's like, is this a trend? Is this? But when something's happening every day, when it seems to be happening multiple times a day, when it seems to be indicative of a systematic program being run, I think we need to talk about it. And what we're talking about, what I'm talking about now, is the phenomenon, the trend, the civilization-destroying reality of the fact that people with criminal records a mile long, in some cases, 100 convictions in 30 years of their life, are being let out onto the streets to kill people. And it's happening at a regular clip, almost as if it's on purpose. And it's one of these things that I find frustrating to cover because it's so obvious what's going on. And it's like, I don't even know how to explain it, but you know, if there was some situation that, you know, oh, it's difficult to figure out what to do here. But in these situations, it's just, we have to throw these people in prison forever. That's it. That's just the answer. It's not complicated. It's not difficult to figure out. Things go so off the rails here. Any sort of, you know, liberty, any sort of vulnerability in our system just immediately gets hijacked and turned towards our destruction. So I can understand, theoretically, in extremely extenuating, unique, almost non-existent circumstances, people go insane and commit crimes because they are genuinely mad. They're genuinely insane. They do not know right and wrong. It usually, if this is the case, it's usually because they're on drugs or have some other, like, diagnosable mental illness. An example would be like Rob Reiner, okay? When you have, you know, this is like millionaire Hollywood elite family and the son massacres the family. It's like, it's inexplicable. It's crazy. There's no reason to it. You can't, okay, in certain circumstances, maybe like that, maybe, you know, in situations like that, or you got a guy who genuinely believes that he's like fighting demons and is just like stabbing children, it's just like insane. Okay, maybe in extenuating circumstances, you have this provision that says, look, this is a special circumstance. We can't really punish this guy in the normal way because he's not going to respond in the normal way. And when that's the case, it should be automatic life in a mental institution. Like, that's it. These have to be the options. Either you are sane enough to be held to account for your actions, or you cannot live in society. Why do I have to explain this? This is what I mean by, like, my frustration. Like, I don't even want to cover this stuff, because what am I supposed to do? Sit here and be like, hey, when a woman lights her father on fire to kill him, don't let her out onto the street with my children. Do I need to explain this? Is this something that's complicated to figure out? Apparently so. So to me, it's not about this being a conspiracy necessarily. It's just a generalized insanity that we're currently having to deal with. And I don't know how we get people to overcome this. I just don't. If you don't immediately see how insane all of this is, what am I supposed to do? Explain it to you? When you have a guy who's been arrested, tried, and convicted 60 times. Just imagine that. He's not 60 years old, so more than once a year, right? Let's say his habit of criminality has lasted 30 years. Every 6 months, this guy is costing the American taxpayer $50,000 because we have to arrest him, we have to hold him, we have to try him, we have to provide him a lawyer, we have to provide the state a lawyer, we have to convict him, we get the conviction, and then he's out on the street, and 6 months later we go through it all again. What are we doing? And when are we not going to take it anymore? Because there's no, like, appealing to reason with this. If reason was applicable, it never would have been implemented in the first place. mentally ill woman released by Nebraska courts kidnaps and slashes 3-year-old boy in the face at Walmart before hero cops shoot her. Now, honestly, they probably would have shot her before she slashed the child. Only, you know, they don't want to spend the rest of their life in jail, which may very well have happened. This is, again, the real danger. I was thinking about this yesterday. The story cropped up again. There was a story last year, the year before, of a, it was a black guy went into a hospital and he was like trying to stab a baby. He was in the newborn wing, the like delivery wing of the hospital where the expectant mothers and the newborn babies are. And he like went insane and was trying to strangle a baby and the baby turned blue. Do y'all remember that? And at the time it was like, the problem is if anybody had, he was acting erratic and he was being all crazy and nobody called the cops. He's in a hospital with a bunch of newborn babies acting like an insane person and everybody's too scared to call the cops because it was after George Floyd had been killed and it was like, oh, well, until they stab a baby, you can't call the cops or else you're racist and you'll lose your job. And literally, I mean, the woman, before she stabs the kid, if the cop shoots her dead and her family gets the NAACP and whoever else to come along and sue the department or demand an investigation, then suddenly, you know, the cop himself is getting the Derek Chauvin treatment and being stabbed multiple times in the federal penitentiary as he serves out his 18-year sentence, right? So that's going through his mind, making him delay the correct action for just that split second necessary for her to permanently scar a child. Suspect accused of choking 2 infants after forcing his way into Odessa hospital nursery. Again, he was acting erratic and being crazy for multiple minutes before actually attacking, and finally the cops called. But they were afraid to call the cops because it was a black guy, and you can't call the cops on black guys until they actually try to kill you, in which case you better have it on camera. Schizophrenic woman who slashed toddler in Omaha Walmart parking lot previously found not guilty by reason of insanity. How is that a thing? How is that a thing? Not guilty by reason of insanity means you're admitting you're incapable of understanding the consequences of your actions and you should be locked up for life. Anybody saying that they're insane in court, the only reaction should be that they get life in prison. That's it. It's the only way to deal with this. So this is what I mean. It starts off with like, okay, maybe there's this extenuating circumstance where this dude's insane. We can't put him in with the regular criminals and we can't just put him away for 5 years. He's crazy. We better, you know, circumvent this whole trial thing and just send him to a mental hospital since everybody acknowledges he's crazy and his act was an act of insanity. And then you take that, you stretch it, you warp it, you manipulate it to where the crime itself is seen as evidence of insanity. In other words, the guy who killed Irina Zarutska is not going to trial because he's been declared insane. I guess because who would stab a random person? They must be insane. Anybody who just stabs a random person, they must be crazy because only a crazy person would stab a random person. So this guy's sitting on a train with a bunch of black people for multiple minutes until a pretty young white girl gets on. Then he gets up, walks past several black people once again to stab the white girl and walks around the train saying, I got that white girl. But he was just crazy. He didn't know what he was doing. He just happened to target a specific type of person. Just like all these people are a specific type of person. Just like every day we see another example of a young, attractive, upstanding white person just murdered in cold blood out of the blue by a random black person, many of whom have been in prison multiple times, dozens of times in some cases. Some who were guilty of the most insane, violent, extreme acts, some cases against their own family, but because they say they're insane, they just get let out. They get let out. Again, do I need to explain to you why that is nonsense? Like, what are we doing here? All I can tell you is that this is what's happening, and the judges have to pay the price for it. It's not necessarily the rabid dog that I blame for biting my child. It's the judge who threw him into the preschool with my child and then locked the door. That's the person I blame. That's the person who should be held to account for this. And I am continually amazed at the mercy and patience of the American people, because I would have a different reaction personally if somebody in my life was seriously hurt or murdered by somebody who was just let out on the street. I'd be killing everyone. I'm just being honest with you. I don't know. Maybe people are more, they believe in our system, our glorious society here. Like, do you understand that people are only going to be pushed for so long? And once that happens, it's a feedback loop that doesn't end. So when I'm saying this, it's not a threat by any means, nor is it an encouragement for anybody else doing it. It is a stark and desperate warning for the people who run our Justice Department that, like, this can't go on much longer. This is beyond unacceptable. Maybe it hits me different because I have a 3-year-old child. But bring up the image again. Bring up the image of this insane demon woman with a butcher knife stabbing a 3-year-old who doesn't even know what the hell's going on. The kid's like looking over his shoulder. He's stuck in a shopping cart looking for his mom. Meanwhile, this literal demon witch is going at him with a butcher's knife. Be a rude awakening for this kid of what the real world is like nowadays. You know, Donald Trump is very concerned about NATO. He's desperate to acquire Greenland. We're going to war in Iran so that Israel can steal Lebanon. And meanwhile, this is what Walmart looks like at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday in the middle of America. A woman in Omaha slashed a child during an attempted kidnapping in a Walmart parking lot before she was shot and killed by police. It was just 1 year ago that 31-year-old Noam Guzman was charged to be a danger, ruled to be a danger to herself and others. The child, Kyler, underwent surgery at Children's Nebraska and is recovering. Police were called to Walmart around 9:20 a.m. When they arrived, they found Guzman holding a knife to the toddler, just 3 years old. The child in a shopping cart had been taken from inside the store after Guzman threatened the caregiver with a knife and forced them outside. The knife she had was stolen, and she cut the child on his face and arm. Officers gave Guzman verbal commands, to which he did not respond. They later said it was not known why Guzman approached the child or harmed him. Oh, well, maybe she was just insane. You know, maybe it would be like mean to put her in. We should let her go. She didn't have a reason to stab a child. So that's evidence she's insane. We can't convict her. That'd be mean. So I guess we have to let her go. I guess, right? She lit her father on fire a year ago. And they let her out because she was insane. Why? Why do we do this? Why is this a thing? Why do I have to report on it? And when are we going to stop putting up with it? When are we going to stop putting up with judges letting out feral dogs into our preschools? Because it's up to us. We're letting it happen.
For as long as I've been an info warrior, 18 years, and Texan, born and raised, so I know like knives like you do. And I finally broke down and ordered one. I got the neon orange, and I'm blown away. I've had Benchmark knives that are easily $400. Had them for a year, lost them. This thing has the same feel, same quality, everything about it. I haven't had a knife stay this sharp in a long time, and I'm like horrible with equipment. I'm like very abusive with knives at work every day. I'm extremely impressed. I'm very impressed. So anybody out there listening, who knows there's a knife comes back in stock, get one. You know, any of them. I want to get the ring knife when it comes back out. Other than that, I'll join all the supplements and,
Yeah, particularly the pocket knives, the folding knives, the flip knives are super high quality at incredibly low prices. I mean, these same knives sell in stores all day for like $80 or sell for like $40. We'll be right back.
Now, coming up in just the next month or so, it looks like this is finally it. They're finally going to be able to shut down InfoWars, but they won't shut you down as InfoWarriors. And that term and that name lives forever. the InfoWar lives forever. In the potential twilight of InfoWars itself as InfoWars.com, we've launched a limited edition line of the InfoWars 1776 limited edition line. A whole bunch of new shirts, a whole bunch of new hats that are limited edition that take a lot of the classic InfoWars shirts. This is the all-time bestseller, navy blue with red InfoWars on it, and adding on the shoulder 1776. These are historic shirts, and they're symbols of your support and your being part of this operation and helping the operation grow and expand into the future. So take action now at thealexjonesstore.com and look at these two new amazing lines.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.
The EU, like a deer in the headlights, stares down shortages now intensely facing Germany.
Many citizens, many medium-sized enterprises, and many businesses in general are under severe strain and have, of course, seen this not only at the petrol stations in recent weeks, but also in terms of energy costs for businesses, whether in the form of fuel or raw materials.
How can we reduce the demand? Because, of course, the least expensive energy is the energy that is not used.
While in the UK, the British economy continues to circle the toilet bowl, according to the IMF.
The International Monetary Fund has downgraded Britain's economic prospects more than any G7 country in its latest update on the state of the global economy.
Front and center, the fallout in Ireland continues after a week of fierce nationwide fuel protests that saw farmers and truckers block refineries, ports, and highways, bringing supply chains to a grinding halt over punishing diesel prices, global shocks, and Michael Martin's coalition carbon tax machine.
Government is now extending the temporary measures to reduce excise duty on petrol, diesel, and marked gas oil from the end of May to the end of July, postponing the increase in carbon tax from May until the budget in October.
The willful obstruction of public roads and the movement of vehicles and persons are offenses under various statutes, including the Public Order Act and Road Traffic Acts. As part of our well-established graduated policing response in dealing with protests, and Garda Síochána is now moving to an enforcement phase in relation to those impacting on critical infrastructure unless they desist and disperse from these blockades.
How can meetings and meetings and nothing for the people? There's thousands and thousands and thousands of Irish farmers and truckers, business people, builders of every corner of this country are all over the place, absolutely frustrated. They don't know whether they're going to be in business in a few months' time. And this is the result. Nothing.
Gas stations ran bone dry, traffic chaos choked Dublin, and emergency services scrambled while ordinary citizens bore the brunt. In a desperate bid to calm the anger, the government rushed out a 505 million euro support package that included lower fuel taxes and delayed the new carbon taxes, threatening to devastate ordinary Irish citizens. The damage runs deep, igniting raw fury at an establishment that brazenly places climate dogma ahead of Irish families struggling with housing shortages and the chaos of uncontrolled mass immigration.
What did Big Jim James Bond himself quote and do? He said, "We'll turn the army on our own citizens," which is reminiscent of something that you would hear in South America. It is reminiscent of a Pyrrhonist. And then we have the man that turned away from the woman in Kentuck not so long ago, but during this election, and we didn't want to hear. And all of a sudden, he's gaslighting the country, saying he's concerned about the 900,000 people on waiting lists. All of a sudden, he's concerned about the 60,000 people on housing lists. He's concerned about the 116,000 people that are waiting for HAP. That's what this government is concerned about. You're concerned about nothing, only serving yourselves.
Irish political party Sinn Féin rammed through its no-confidence motion. The government countered with its own confidence motion and held the line, defeating the challenge.
Don't forget, folks, what's happening here in Ireland is happening everywhere. The amount of messages I get saying it's happening in Canada, it's happening in Australia, it's happening in Europe. This is a global agenda, 2030, right?
Taoiseach Michael Martin clings to power for now, yet the votes exposed a rattled regime scrambling amid public outrage as the Emerald Isles people question how long distant globalist agendas will override their right to affordable fuel and basic national sovereignty. John Bound reporting for InfoWars.
Are you fine and share that video at band.videoinfowars.com. Ireland has had enough. And, you know, we got to, it's hard to find information about Ireland. The mainstream media is obviously not covering it, and I get a lot of conflicting information, but all I know is that that island has been targeted for total destruction. It's operating something like a quarter of its population is now foreign born. And they're trying to increase that as rapidly as humanly possible. Because it's a genocide, because they're committing genocide against white people.
What's this? Oh, I've got power plant. Oh, what's this? I've got methyl drive. The two ingredients in the Power Drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them.
Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
Discover trends and global developments years before they happen, right here on the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. Third hour is on for this Wednesday, the 15th of April broadcast. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today. Rob Dew will be taking over the War Room this afternoon. Jay Dyer will be taking over for me and hosting the fourth hour here on the Alex Jones Show. We have a lot still to cover in this final hour, mostly American political stuff, including stuff like this. Abigail Spanberger signs law to circumvent electoral college for Virginia voters. So, Abigail Spanberger, the CIA agent radical leftist that just got elected as governor of Virginia, basically just gave up the right of Virginians to vote for president. This is, again, just completely insane. Governor Spanberger has signed a bill to circumvent the Electoral College and have Virginia become a member of a compact between states that are looking to give their Electoral College votes to the presidential candidate that wins the popular vote instead of the candidate that voters from the state choose. So if you're in Virginia and you vote in the presidential election, it won't actually affect where Virginia's delegates go. It will simply be added to the pile with the rest of America, and whoever wins the popular vote will win the electoral college votes for your state. I think she just robbed you of your vote, essentially. Again, this is just one of these things that the left just sort of does, and it's just, it utterly breaks our electoral system. You can't just unilaterally change the way that your state casts its electoral vote. Like, how is this permitted? I could understand how you could change it within the established structure of states vote via electoral college, but to basically say it doesn't matter what the people of our state vote, we are just going to give our electoral college to whoever everybody else wants. So, I mean, what's the population of Virginia? What's the population of, like, New York City? Because, essentially, your vote just isn't going to matter anymore. You can be outvoted by a bunch of recent arrivals in New York and L.A., and they just get to dictate who the president is. And all of Virginia will give their electoral college votes to support whoever the candidate is that major population centers in big cities far away from Virginia want. Abigail Spanberger represents the latest and extremely successful Democrat strategy of running somebody who says very normal things, who just, the meme is John Normalson. Hi, I'm John Normalson. I want to help families and lower prices. Then they get into office and it's like, I'm getting rid of voting and I'm letting rapists out on the street and I'm giving drugs to children. And it's just like, what the hell? This is the strategy they're pursuing. And they know that people will fall for it. Because, again, it's just, it's sad that we laid all of this out before she was even elected. But it's actually not that complicated. And you'll see it everywhere now. Everywhere you'll see. The Republicans will be running some token Republican where it's, and the meme that this comes from is there's like the guy on top who's like, I'm a gay Native American, but I'm Republican. What? And it's like, that's the Republican candidate. They're like, I'm an anchor baby, but I don't want women in men's sports, so vote for me. And then the Democrats, it's, hi, I'm John Normalson. Vote for me, and I will be a politician. And it's like, people are like, yeah, just vote for that guy. That guy seems reasonable. He seems fine. He's not some gimmick. It's not some dude nobody's ever heard of. He looks like a responsible guy. He's run some small business. Let's put him in charge. And then he rules like Chairman Mao. And then he gets into office, and they just shove through the most radical program you've ever seen in a way that makes their rule permanent, by the way. Like Abigail Spanberger, the way that she's changed some of the electoral processes already at the state level in Virginia, is basically guaranteed Republicans will never get that state back. Because they play for keeps, because they play to win, because they don't actually care about the function of our government. They don't actually agree with or understand our founding principles. They don't have any genuine love for the Republican system and any of this. They actually want to destroy it and tear it down, and they're willing to do that. So, like, we're in a very interesting situation because the people that actually believe in the things the Constitution represents, the morals and values and foundational principles that were enshrined but not not created in, but simply embodied, enshrined, and elucidated in the Constitution, we are being destroyed and boxed out of power by people who have no scruples because they don't actually like the Constitution. They don't actually believe in the foundational principles. They don't actually like the founding stock of America. They want us all done away with. And if we don't play fire, like fight fire with fire, if we don't do to them what they do to us, then we're abandoning the field. We will lose outright. So is it possible to violate our own convictions in the ultimate goal of reclaiming the metaphysical importance of the Constitution? Or do we stick to our principles knowing that we lose everything? I don't think that's, a crazy perspective to bring. And it's not just the all of this stuff, the letting criminals out for free and doing away with the voting for president and just like all of this insane stuff. She also just signed a law ending the tax exemption status of the United Daughters of the Confederacy and other Confederate groups. So there is nothing extreme about honoring your heritage. There is absolutely nothing extreme about being the descendant of a Confederate. These groups were made by people who were alive while the Civil War was happening, yet somehow they were less hateful and scared of the Confederacy than people nowadays. The soldiers who literally fought and killed Confederate soldiers were less hateful and bigoted towards the South than Abigail Spanberger and people alive right now. If this was such a crazy thing, if this was a rebel group that, wanted to overthrow the country, and then they wouldn't have been allowed to create the groups in the first place. These groups were created at a time when the memory of the Civil War was alive in people's minds. It was fine then. Now it's an extremist group. The Daughters of the Confederacy. Literally a bunch of, like, Southern stay-at-home moms who, like, give presentations about their ancestors. Just like the Daughters of the American Revolution or any of these groups that operate. But they have simply decided by fiat, with no justification, they're extremists. They just said it. They didn't need to provide any justification. They didn't need to argue it. They just, by fiat, by dictate, Confederate groups are now extremist groups. They are now illegal. They will not get tax-exempt status. We will bankrupt them completely. Now, Vince Dow responds to this on X, saying this is a notable precedent. You can apparently just ban nonprofit groups that you label extremist. Republicans should take notes. Every communist organization in the United States should be shut down. The No Kings protest will evaporate overnight. Let Democrats find out. Couple problems with this. One, Republicans will never do this. They'll never do it, even though they should. But this is the problem. We actually are like, oh, it's wrong just to say that a group is an extremist and, you know, take away their tax-exempt status. They shouldn't do that. Okay, but they did. They are. They're doing it. They just did it. You can wag your finger at them, but those groups are going to not exist anymore. What are you going to do about it? Nothing. Now, the irony is, the thing that makes this less than just unequal, is that the Confederate, you know, the Daughters of the Confederacy, not radical by any stretch of the imagination, not extremist by any such stretch of the imagination. They don't even have, like, political. It's literally just like a history and heritage group who meet to read old letters. Like, it's crazy. They're not extremist by any stretch of the imagination. Meanwhile, you've got communist groups running around firebombing places and bragging about it online, you know, making extremist posters that they're putting up, kill all white people, like, insane stuff. So the Republicans would actually be justified. The Republicans could actually look at the communist groups operating right now on American soil and say, these people are an existential threat to our country. They're dangerous, they're terroristic, they're violent, and they have a stated purpose of overthrowing our entire country and driving us into chaos so that they can rule over the ashes. We actually have a good reason to go after these groups, but we won't. The Democrats are going after the Confederate group because they simply have destroyed any other system, you know, any other group that upholds American values has already been destroyed. So now they're just going after, like, whatever remnants are left and just destroying those systematically. Would it be against the Constitution? Would it be in violation of my conservative principles to say we should not allow these communist groups to operate? This is the way our system works. It's supposed to be precedent setting and then matching that precedent. Okay, you want to ban the Daughters of the Confederacy because you just don't like their ancestors? Then we can do that too. I don't understand why we won't. When it comes to the question of anti-Semitism, if we're going to ban a style of thought, if we're going to ban a topic of discussion, what if we banned Judaism? What if we banned the practice of Judaism? What if we banned any celebration of the State of Israel? What if we banned that religion outright? Would that be more or less of a violation than banning criticism of that religion? I'd see it about the same. I think if you're going to do one, I don't see what the moral outrage would be at doing the other. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. Is this the type of Pandora's box you want to open up? Because that's exactly what's happening. So I could go on forever about the violation of American principles, that banning a historical heritage group because you work for the CIA. Like, obviously that's wrong. Obviously that shouldn't be done. But it is happening. This is the world we live in. These groups are now going to have to move headquarters or go bankrupt. So that's just the rules we need to play by. It's, I don't know, I don't find it all that complicated. And it would actually possibly be one minor consideration for the Democrats when they start thinking, should we destroy something? Should we do something to the conservatives? What if in their mind they had to think, gosh, if we do that, they'll do it to us? That's the way precedent is supposed to work. Yeah, I've been around since the 1800s. That's why this is supposed to work. It's supposed to be every time they think, hey, I bet we could ban the Daughters of the Confederacy. They should think, yeah, but then the Republicans are going to come back and ban all of our groups, and we really like our groups, so maybe let's let them have their groups so we can have ours. Instead, they're like, let's ban the Daughters of the Confederacy, and then the Republicans will huff and puff and do nothing, and then we'll ban the Daughters of the Revolution. Okay, and then Republicans will be mad, and they'll be outraged, and then we'll ban, you know, whatever other organization, and eventually they'll ban all the organizations that even try to uphold the values that we originally held, and so suddenly it won't even be against our American values to ban groups that we don't like, because all of the groups that remind us that we once had free speech will all have been systematically eliminated. I think that might be part of the process going on here. And so as we look at, like, everything across the board, the frustration I experience with all of this is just like, if Republicans simply stood for what they say they stand for, or fought the Democrats with the same intensity they fought for Israel, this wouldn't be an issue. None of this would be a problem. And again, this is the frustration. I'm not just bringing it up because I'm obsessed with Israel, obsessed with Iran. This is the best example of why the Republicans' inability to do anything to combat the Democrats is a choice. It's an absolute choice. Because when it comes to something that Israel wants, we're not concerned about precedent setting. We're not concerned about violating the laws or the spirit of the Constitution. We just do it. And so I would like the Republicans to just do that for us. How about, and again, this is the craziest thing. For, like, decades, we're complaining and yelling about the vicious anti-white hatred that came out of universities, out of the official universities, not just, like, random people at universities, university students with bad ideas. The universities themselves had courses about eliminating and abolishing whiteness. The school newspaper writes articles saying your DNA is an abomination. White people, your DNA is poison and you should be eradicated. That was coming from the official organs of the universities themselves. For decades, we're complaining about this, yelling about this, expressing concern about this. Nothing gets done. And if you could even get them to acknowledge it, even get them to address the concern, you'd inevitably be hit with some excuse about, well, what are we supposed to do? There are universities, we have free speech, and we believe in free speech, and there's just, we might not like it, but hey, the best way to fight bad speech is with good speech. You get out there and make your own arguments. You're like, okay, well, white people are nice. And they're like, that's illegal. Shut it down. You're not allowed to say that. Okay, great. But there's nothing we can do. Nothing we can do about the universities being viciously, openly anti-white. Because it's free speech, and what are we supposed to do? Until October 7th happened, until you had students on universities protesting against Israel, in which case all of a sudden we figured out what we can do. All of a sudden it wasn't an impossible task. It wasn't a violation of free speech. It wasn't against our principles or just too complicated of a thing to handle. It was, okay, well, we're taking away their endowment until they fire the people we don't like. Oh, gee, you could have just done that at any point, huh? So it's not that you're like this principled, we will not violate our belief in free speech, regardless of how it makes us feel. No, you're willing to do it. You can do it. You have the capability, the levers of power. You do it when it's Israel. You just don't do it when it's us. If Abigail Spanberger banned AIPAC as an extremist group, you bet your ass they would be down her throat and impeaching her and destroying all of Virginia. Like, it would just be insanity across the board. She gets rid of the Confederacy, and it's crickets. Nobody says anything. No Republican decides to fight back, and certainly not treat them in kind by banning their actual extremist, actual seditious, actual foreign-funded communist groups. So, just like everything, it's like, Do I need to explain this to you? I don't know. Am I some sort of genius? Because this all seems very obvious to me. When a woman lights her father on fire, don't let her out on the street. Is this, do I need to write a paper? I mean, I didn't even go to school. Maybe I'd be smarter if I went to school. Maybe I'd understand why we can't just throw criminals in prison or do to the Democrats what they do to us or use governmental power to benefit us and not other people. I'm too stupid to understand. I'm too low IQ to comprehend the sophisticated operation of the government that says the Constitution can only be wielded against the Americans, never for their benefit. The Constitution will prevent you from deporting a single illegal alien, but somehow the Constitution is nowhere to be seen when they're opening the gates and flooding our country with tens of millions. This doesn't make any sense. So if it's our self-imposed adherence to normal functions that aren't normal anymore, that don't exist anymore, then we need to give that up and we just need to fight fire with fire. Doesn't mean I don't believe in what the Constitution says. It means that I want to get back to a country that can actually embody those values. Right now, we are run by and infested by an infinite number of con men and foreigners and CIA agents who do not believe in the Constitution and are systematically destroying not just the strictures of the Constitution and the restrictions on the government that the Constitution lays out, but destroying like the groups that believe in the Constitution and the people that uphold the Constitution and the history that says why our Constitution is special and unique. It's all being destroyed and deliberately replaced with a false narrative designed to demonize the very freedoms the Constitution enshrines. Again, not complicated, not difficult to understand. Why have white people been demonized by our culture for the last several decades? Because you can associate white people with the history of white nations. The history of white nations is the history of the Constitution, the creating incrementally the freedoms that we enjoy and were enshrined in our founding documents. If you can demonize the people, you demonize the ideas. If you can demonize the ideas about individualism and representative politics and the point of the government being for the benefit of the people, because we hold these truths to be self-evident, if they can destroy that, then they can enslave you and you have nothing to appeal to, because what you would appeal to is what, the Nazis, i.e. the white people? Oh, so you're like a white supremacist. Oh, so you believe in the Constitution, so you think that like black people should be slaves and that like Jewish people should be in gas chambers? Because that's what the history of white people is, right? So you demonize the people, you demonize the ideas, you get the world to accept willing slavery by convincing them that freedom and individual responsibility is somehow reflective of a white supremacy, which has been determined to be the only and greatest evil that exists. Really the only evil that exists. I mean, we'll see. I'll get into it in the next one. Not a lot's off the table these days. Hell, apparently you can kill children. That's righteous. As long as you're doing it for Israel, you can promote pedophilia. That's super cool, most popular, you know, show in the country these days. The only sin that will exist in the future is the sin of being white or supporting traditionally white ideas, ideas that came out of Europe and England, free speech, individuality, trial by a jury of your peers whose purpose is seeking justice, not racial animus. These things are going away. They're being deliberately destroyed. Abigail Spanberger is the method by which they're doing it. Having a seemingly normal, average person run as a Democrat who just wants what's best for your family and then getting into power and ruthlessly doing everything they possibly can, regardless of precedent, regardless of what we would normally have, which would be governors who actually believe in free speech and understand the principles of our government. No, they actually are deliberately destroying them, and the Republicans refuse to fight back. We refuse to do anything to stop this onslaught. We refuse to defend ourselves or attack the Democrats. And so we're losing. It's not complicated. It's not hard to figure out. It's very simple.
I know you're the big health guy. You're way better shape than I am. Don't kick my ass. I've seen you working out with the Liver King. You say you've taken methylene before. I want you to take our medical grade. It takes 30 minutes to kick in. So good for your body. I'd like you to drink this, Jay. You said earlier, what? I appreciate it. I want to get your true review. It doesn't work? Tell me. Here it is, brother.
He's Cheers.
Looks just like the stuff from Doom, the water of life. He's drinking the juice of a strangled, drowned sandworm right now. Baron Harkonnen is not happy. We're going to see what happens.
20 minutes later.
I feel like my brain is clearer and working faster. It feels like my brain and my energy have had the accelerator hit on them. I felt it in my brain and my energy.
Well,
I like it. I'm going to get me some before I leave.
We're going to give you a couple bottles of it, bro. We love it. It's amazing. Get yours now. TheAlexShowStore.com. I am making this historic announcement on Friday, December 12, 2025. The future of InfoWars hangs in the balance. It is in your hands. They're having a state auction in January next year in about a month. But we don't even have the money for payroll or for satellites or for bandwidth. We've got this next shot to survive, but if we don't get the funds in, we shut down. So we're selling three emergency limited edition posters at InfoWarsStore.com right now that are critical to us staying on the air. I want to encourage you to go now to get I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, John Paul Jones poster, and two others, Make No Peace with Evil and Defend the West, Iconic Crusades. Go now to InfoWarsStore.com to get one or more of these iconic posters, limited edition. We cannot do it without you. I have fired the bat signal. Take action now if you want to stand with us in this fight at InfoWarsStore.com, and I salute you for your support.
Now, coming up in just the next month or so, it looks like this is finally it. They're finally going to be able to shut down InfoWars, but they won't shut you down as InfoWarriors, and that term and that name lives forever. The InfoWar lives forever. In the potential twilight of InfoWars itself is InfoWars.com, we've launched a limited edition line of the InfoWars 1776 limited edition line. A whole bunch of new shirts, a whole bunch of new hats that are limited edition that take a lot of the classic InfoWars shirts. This is the all-time bestseller, navy blue with red InfoWars on it, and adding on the shoulder 1776. These are historic shirts, and they're symbols of your support and your being part of this operation and helping the operation grow and expand into the future. So take action now at TheAlexShowStore.com and look at these two new amazing lines.
Hey, Chase, good to talk to you again. I wanted to do a quick plug on the methylene blue, on the long-term effects that it had on me. Back in 2020, I got COVID. My brother and my dad both have eczema. After I got COVID, it must have, it opened that dormant cell in my body or whatever. So I've been dealing with eczema ever since 2020. And the long-term effects of the methylene blue, 99% gone.
That's absolutely incredible. I'm so happy. Have your relatives tried it too to see the same effect?
I have been trying to get my brother to take it and he's skeptical, but I'll tell you what, I got four bottles sitting on my table. I think I'm just going to give him one. And I think if I just give it to him, I think he'll eventually try it.
Yeah, that's a good move.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. The Alex Jones Show, because there is a war on.
IQ tester.
Yep, that's what we do.
Okay, because I think I need one.
Okay, yeah, we can do that.
Why do you need one?
Well, I've had some people lately telling me I have a low IQ.
Ooh, shots fired. Gosh. Who's been telling you that?
Well, some people online have been telling me that, like the president, and even my dogs are looking at me a little bit condescendingly now.
Well, we'll find out. So with this IQ test, I'll just ask you a series of simple, really common sense questions, and you just give me your best answer.
I'm actually kind of a little bit nervous right now.
Oh, yeah, you should be, because if you turn out to be what some would call a low IQ nut job, then you're pretty much a lost cause.
Well, that doesn't sound good.
All right, first question. Which word doesn't belong? Apple, banana, carrot, orange.
Is it carrot?
Very good, because it's not a fruit at all. It's clever. Next question. Who would be considered more of a traitor to their country? Person A, who receives $230 million from a foreign lobby, or person B, who receives $0 from a foreign lobby?
I mean, clearly person A.
Wrong.
Come on, that's gotta be correct.
Next. Hypothetical question. If a country has a major shipping waterway that you want to have open, and it's currently open, but they'll close it if you go to war, what would be a smart way to ensure that waterway stays open?
You don't go to war with them.
No, not even close. I mean, common sense would say go to war with that country and stay at war with that country as a way of putting pressure on them to reopen it after they've closed it because you went to war with them.
Are you playing with a full deck?
I don't play cards, but thanks for asking. Oh, and this is a good one. If you had the desire to take down an international pedophile ring, what would be the best way to follow through on that desire?
Well, you launch a full investigation using every means necessary, and then you prosecute those bastards the fullest extent of the law.
Wrong. No. You would launch an effort to prevent any investigations and prosecutions.
That can't be right.
Well, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
No. These questions are kind of weird.
Oh, I assure you, these are standardized IQ test questions, sir. Next question. Here's a scenario. You got a person, they work for America and America only. What country does that person work for?
America?
That's incorrect. They work for Iran. Next question. Who's more beautiful as a woman? France's first lady, or maybe man, or Candace Owens?
Candace Owens?
No.
Have you seen France's first lady?
I would totally do her. If she had an OnlyFans, I would subscribe. Any reasonable man would. Okay, how would you describe what America first means?
Putting America's interests first above any other foreign nation.
No, you're actually describing anti-Semitism. Yuck. Okay, last question. What year did we first land on the moon?
We've never been to the moon.
No, we've been to the moon. We go all the time. Well, your test is complete. I've never seen a score like this before.
What'd I get?
You got an IQ of 65.
Is that high?
No, that's a very low IQ.
My life is literally ruined. He was right.
Who was right?
Just don't worry about that now. My big question is, what am I going to do with my life now that I've learned that I am so stupid?
Well, just remember, you're also a nut job. But yeah, you're pretty screwed. Really, the only option I can give low IQ people such as yourself is to, like, go off and open a Somali daycare.
I am completely devastated. Are you talking about that creature looks like from the Lord of the Rings, the goblin thing that shuffles around beside Macron, whatever it is? You're saying she's beautiful? Okay. Beautiful doesn't do it like a gremlin, maybe.
Good. All right, folks. That's the latest from Alex Jones and J.P. Sears. You, too, can be low IQ with one of these stylish low IQ hats. You can let everybody know that you're too stupid to see the beauty of Emmanuel Macron's wife. You're too stupid to understand why America first means we need to go to war forever for Israel. Incredible stuff. You can get that hat at thealexjonesstore.com. Thealexjonesstore.com is your one-stop shop for incredible supplements, awesome merchandise, and you keep us on the air and telling the truth regardless of who likes it or what lies we have to disprove in the process. TheAlexJonesStore.com, TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison if you want to let him know who sent you. I want to go to a video now. This was just published by Marjorie Taylor Greene talking about Donald Trump's support of FISA, which is, I guess it would be shocking if it wasn't just the latest in a series of foundational promises from Trump being broken recently. He really does seem to have turned around on everything. And here's Marjorie Taylor Greene's reaction to his latest announcement that he said, hey, you know, just because it destroys some of your freedoms, it doesn't matter because the military really likes FISA. You know, the court that was used to spy on Trump and destroy his first administration and try to send him to jail. He loves it now. Let's watch.
I'm having a really hard time keeping up with what is the new MAGA now. Apparently, the new MAGA is warrantless spying on Americans. This has always been an issue that President Trump and especially conservative Republicans, when I served in Congress, we all said there should never be warrantless spying on Americans. And this was about FISA Section 702. But apparently, President Trump has come out and demanded that Republicans in Congress pass a clean reauthorization of FISA Section 702. Now, this comes really approximately 2 years after President Trump had tweeted, or sorry, put on Truth Social, his version of Twitter, in all caps, kill FISA. It was illegally used against me and many others. They spied on my campaign, DJT. So before he was president, he was demanding that Congress kill FISA. That was when Republicans, we had the majority under President Biden. But now that Donald Trump is president, he wants a clean reauthorization of FISA. Don't add anything about warrant requirements, nothing. Just pass it so that the federal government can do whatever they want and continue to spy on whoever they want. Let's give a little history about that because I find this really frustrating. So there's been a lot of abuses of FISA Section 702. If you'll remember, this included backdoor searches where Section 702 allowed the FBI and NSA to query data for information on U.S. citizens without a warrant, by the way. Targeting American citizens, queries have been used inappropriately to search for information on protesters. That would be you if you don't like what your government's doing. Journalists, what happened to freedom of the press? Political commentators, members of Congress, and a state judge. There was a high volume of misuse. Reports revealed that between late 2020 and early 2021, FBI analysts ran over 278,000 queries that violated agency standards, failing to meet legal thresholds for foreign surveillance. And it goes on and on and on. So why is President Trump demanding a clean reauthorization? And why are Republicans like Mike Johnson and Jim Jordan willing to give it to him? Just a little jog down memory lane. Jim Jordan, who was always a strong ally of mine in the House, was actually one of the main members of Congress demanding warrant requirements on FISA. But now Jim Jordan is totally fine with whatever needs to be done. This is a case where it's turning into Republican members of Congress are just completely obedient to whatever the president and the White House tells them to do. They have totally let go of the issues that they have fought on. And that's at the peril of the American people, because the American people elect their representatives to actually represent them, not the president and whatever he is demanding on any given day. I just want to give a shout out to Thomas Massie, because Thomas Massie posted that he is a no on final passage of FISA 702 reauthorization bill. Thank you, Thomas Massie, once again. He said, if it doesn't include warrant provision and other reforms to protect U.S. citizens' right to privacy, he's voting no. And that's the right thing to do. That doesn't make Thomas Massie a traitor. That doesn't make him a Democrat. That means he's standing up for the rights of Americans. That's exactly what we always did in the past, until now President Trump has decided that he's 100% for the deep state and 100% for the federal government to be able to spy on you as much as they want without a warrant requirement. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, if you voted for President Trump, you should be calling him out, holding him accountable. If you voted for Republicans, you should be calling them out, holding them accountable for the issues that they always claimed they would fight on. And this one today is pretty shocking to me, and I'm pretty disgusted with it. So you guys, call the congressional switchboard, do whatever you can, but let Congress know that you don't want to be spied on by the federal government, by our intelligence agencies, no matter what President Trump says. Okay, thanks. Have a great day.
Yeah, I'm not sure how you really spin this one. What good is the FISA court at all? I mean, it's literally just used to spy on Americans, spy on Trump's presidential campaign. And maybe this would be one of those instances where, like, the Democrats set the precedent by doing it, and then we could do it, but we're not going to do it like that. I wouldn't even be in favor of that anyway, but I guess they're just getting away with it is the actual thing that's happening, is that they get to abuse these things, but then we're not allowed to take them away because of how necessary they are. You see, the fact that they're necessary means you have to harshly control any abuse. Again, there's some people, I don't know where the confusion comes in. If this is so necessary, if this is such an important thing for us to have, then anybody violating it and putting its existence at risk should be dealt with harshly. That's the risk. That's the person doing the bad thing. But they get to abuse it, and then if you want to take it away, they say, oh, but we need it for the actual terrorism that it stops or whatever. So it's basically blackmail. So it's basically, let us spy on you and anybody that we want to spy on. Let us get, you know, secret access to all of your devices and spy on you continuously, and then use that information, politically leak it out or weaponize it internally to keep control of America. And if you don't, then gosh, I guess the terrorist attacks will be your fault. I guess if you take away the ability for us to spy on Americans and rig the political system, then I guess you're kind of responsible if terrorists attack, right? It's utterly inverted. It's completely ridiculous, but that is the case. I want to go now to clip number 5. This is Steve Bannon also talking about the trouble of Trump's administration, the coming up to the midterms, and sort of the reverse view, it seems like Trump has of his popularity. I think you'll understand what I mean when we hear Steve Bannon talk about it. Here he is yesterday talking about Trump's failure to uphold the popularity he enjoyed in 2024.
He says, send every H-1B visa holder and their families and everybody that came over with it on the next plane out of here, and all those billets come open for, wait for it, Americans, American workers. If you do that, this polling on the young people did not come because President Trump went to UFC fights. Yeah, that's a cool thing, and it's one of the things that a lot of these young men are attracted to, and it's great president does that, and Dana White and everybody, they got clearly a market and they touch a nerve. They came because finally somebody was standing up for their economic interest. Their economic interest. And now we've abandoned that. It shouldn't be lost on people that the free fall in that is not because of memes and it's not because of UFC. It's because we've abandoned them to foreign workers. Full stop. When you put American citizens' interest first, paramount, at the top of it, a special deal. Yes, they should get a special deal. They treat Americans like you should be supplicants for your basic rights. Oh, well, these foreigners, screw everybody else. American citizens get a...
I don't know why this is so hard. I don't know why this is so hard to comprehend. And I think part of it is that, I mean, obviously the boomers are the number one constituency of the Republicans. Again, while young people are desperate, just trying to start their lives out, trying to believe in the promise of America and that they can actually achieve something if they just put in the hard work, they're being screwed over. And the GOP is putting out advertisements bragging that they're no longer going to charge tax on new boat purchases. New boat purchases. Okay, so they're serving the people who are buying boats while the people who are living out of their cars are only doing worse. Why would you do that if you weren't trying to destroy the Republican Party? Why would you not offer a solution or at the very least, understanding for what the average young person is going through. Instead, all you get from the Republicans is insults and name-calling, basically, as they sell out our country to foreign interests. And the obvious and inevitable result of that will be that socialists take power. Duh. And yet again, I'm like, how do people not understand this? How do people not understand that when a young person is sitting there going, I've got all this student debt, I feel like I'm trapped, I can't even afford a home, I can't even afford to live by myself renting, and I'm working my fingers to the bone just to pay off the interest of the debt. People used to understand this. This is from a Saturday Evening Post from, I believe, the 1940s. I actually took this picture. I found it at a thrift store or a whatever, antique shop. And it says this: the contented workman, the enemy of unrest. Anarchy is the child of despair. Apart from the cranks, the money-lusting exploiters of ignorance, and the temperamental nihilist, nobody wants to go red, right? Nobody wants to be a communist. Men only become communist only if they are bitterly discontented. Let a man feel that he is oppressed and exploited, that his employer neither knows nor cares if he lives or dies, that whatever happens, he has nothing to lose, and he listens with conviction to the agitator's vindictive foamings and to the promise of a communist heaven on earth. But the contented workman, with his family, his home, his savings, sure of fair treatment by his employer, secure against accident, is immune to the virus of the agitator. Class war, revolution, blood, murder, what promise lies in these thoughts to the contented workman? It's like, try to say that now, people will call you a socialist. Try to say that now, it's like, well, you just don't understand. You just aren't as sophisticated. You don't understand why corporations need to be allowed to exploit people to the maximum degree and, you know, offshore all of their work and replace all of their employees with H-1Bs. You're just not sophisticated enough. You just don't understand how the stock market works. It's like, no, this is actually very simple. If you want people to love your system, it has to benefit them in some way. In some way. Our system is the better system. It does provide for a contented life. It can be a system in which people can work minimum amount. Mom can stay home. Dad can work a couple hours a day. Go on trips on the weekend. Take a couple vacations a year. Retire at 60. That's what life used to be like here in America. For the vast majority of people. Now, it's those same people who bought houses in 1990 as 30-year-olds, they're the same people buying houses now because the economy has been destroyed for their sake. You can't just ignore that and then expect people to go along with you. And interestingly, I was looking at the speech that JFK gave right before his death, where he talks about the quote-unquote monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that's confronting the world at the time. And a lot of people can put that in a lot of context. It's a very powerful quote. What he was actually talking about was communism. And he actually starts that speech, if you go read the full text of the actual speech he gave, with a very similar story to what I just read about the contented workman. He's giving a speech to a bunch of media people, a bunch of newspaper men and that sort of thing. And he says, I appreciate how much your generous invitation to be here tonight. You bear heavy responsibility these days, and an article I read some time ago reminded me of how particularly heavy the burdens of present-day events bear upon your profession. Remember, he's talking to newspaper men and the mainstream media at the time. He says, you may remember that in 1851, the New York Herald Tribune, under sponsorship and publishing of Horace Greeley, employed in its London correspondent an obscure journalist by the name of Karl Marx. We are told that foreign correspondent Marx, stone broke and with a family ill and undernourished, constantly appealed to Greeley and managing editor Charles Dana for an increase in his munificent salary of $5 per installment, a salary which he and Engels ungratefully labeled as, quote, the lousiest petty bourgeois cheating. But when all of his financial appeals were refused, Marx looked around for other means of livelihood and fame, eventually terminating his relationship with the Tribune and devoting his talents full time to the cause that would bequeath the world the seeds of Leninism, Stalinism, revolution, and the Cold War. If only this capitalistic New York newspaper had treated him more kindly. If only Marx had remained a foreign correspondent, history might have been different. And I hope all publishers will bear this lesson in mind next time they receive a poverty-stricken appeal for a small increase in the expense account for an obscure newspaper. So he's saying the same thing, right? It's a tongue-in-cheek and kind of funny way of saying it. But he's essentially saying, look, people wouldn't have come up with communism and certainly wouldn't pursue communism now if they felt like they were valued by their employer, by their nation, by their neighborhood, by their people. Now, how much worse is our condition? And remember the video we saw yesterday about the girl who was fully in the leftist cult and only broke out after seeing how insane they were about COVID? And she said, and again, I can explain it to you, but when somebody like her explains it, it's so much more powerful, where she's like, I believed in this guilt over being white. And she's like, I was indoctrinated with this idea that as a white person, I was bad. I was basically the beneficiary and privileged because of all of these horrible things that my people had done in the past. And so as penance, I had to give up everything to these people. Like, they actually imbue this. So now we've got people that aren't just sort of outraged that they're not being treated well. They've actually taken in the lesson of not being treated well. They think they deserve it. It's like a Stockholm syndrome. And so they're so radically communist and socialist, they don't even pursue it because they're making the claim that it will benefit this country. They're actually like, no, we do deserve to go down. We are evil. We support communism because it will destroy America. So it's even worse than it was back in the 60s, but it's something that I feel like we've forgotten or has been just deliberately driven out of our public conversation, is that if you want America to survive and if you want conservatism to last, you have to actually make arguments that appeal to people's self-interest and their personal lives and how much, you know, damage is being done to their personal lives by the policies, by the pursuit of profit, by big corporations. They don't represent us. I am not Amazon. I am not McDonald's. This does nothing to help me. And yet we've been convinced in this false dichotomy that it's between capitalists and communism. The actual dichotomy is between communists and Christians. Communists and America. Freedom. Choice. When the communists rose to power and we were trying to delineate ourselves from communism and define what we believed, we didn't put in money we trust on the Bibles, we put in God we trust on the money. Our motto, e pluribus unum, was changed to in God we trust, specifically to counter-signal the atheistic communist movement. People back then understood the dichotomy. They understood that the difference is between freedom, life, and love, and, you know, Christian worldview of mercy and understanding versus the harsh, brutal, retarded, dangerous, and deadly communistic atheism. That's the actual thing that we're trying to battle for right now, battle against communism in its atheistic form, and battle for the society and the culture and the fundamental values that came out of Christian Europe. That's the actual dichotomy. And the more you focus on serving the capitalist interests, you're damaging the very fabric of the society that's actually worth upholding. That's going to be it for me. Jay Dyer takes over as the fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show continues. War Room comes up after that. Stay tuned. Very powerful shows finishing out the day here. Go to thealexjonesstore.com to support us. It's your last chance to get InfoWars branded material.
What's this? Oh, I've got Power Plan. Oh, what's this? I've got Methyl Drive. The two ingredients in the Power Drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them.
Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly absolutely perfectly with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them. I developed them. High quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
I'm holding in my hands two compounds that are guaranteed to change your life. T3, pure atomic iodine. Nobody else has it. It's next level. And ultramethylene blue, medical grade methylene blue. These two products together supercharge the mitochondria, the cells, clean out the body, and are game changers. Iodine is essential, meaning you die without it. The UN admits that most people that have cognitive disabilities is because of lack of iodine. You add ultramethylene blue to this, it supercharges everything. Ladies and gentlemen, T3 is now available at DallasTheStore.com, the very best iodine that we know of that exists. There may be better. We'll adopt that if we can. But this is the best for sale we found, and we have the best medical grade, ultramethylene blue. Get yours now, right now. If you're a VIP member, for 50% off. Regular customers, 25% off. It funds the InfoWar, but more importantly, it is a game changer. If you don't take my advice and try this, you're insane. All you got to do is try it. You'll be blown away. Take action now. TheAlchemistStore.com to get T3, now available, and Methylene Blue at TheAlchemistStore.com.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.
They've already conquered most of the world, and they're not going to stop. George Soros stole the pension funds of dozens of countries' old people. The left loves him. He crashes currencies. He puts old people on the street. He helps Adolf Hitler round up Jews. They love that. That's power. That's the pure exercise of will to them, because they're such disgusting people. Look at Mondami. Look at Alexander Soros. Those are the most disingenuous, fake, wicked, manipulating people that have nothing but absolute, total rage towards you and your family. You're a hard-working middle-class black family, they hate you. You're a hard-working middle-class Hispanic family, they hate you. You're a hard-working middle-class white family, they hate you. They hate anything that ever stood up to total power and total control. It's in their textbooks of why the West must be destroyed, so there's no example of anybody else and no hope worldwide. Nothing but darkness and evil rulers that can do whatever they want. And how they convince the West that we're the authors of the evil, that we're the authors of slavery, that we're the authors of darkness and destruction. When despite all our problems, the West has been the great light. And they don't deny that in Japan. They don't deny that as philosophers, even in India. They teach that there still, but not here. You've got to be taught that you are bad. You are evil. So you must bow down and give up your life force, give up your will, give up your survival instinct, and learn to hate yourself, because the world's going to end. Because the ice caps all melted, the polar bears all drowned. None of it's true. And you know it's not true. But when AOC and all of them tell you the world ends in 2030, well, under their 2030 agenda, the world as you know it is over. And any free market capitalist system of competition is over. And the mega corporations through the governments rule you. And they do it all through class envy, when it is the billionaire globalist class, the BlackRocks, the Larry Finks, that are running all of this. So when you hear everybody that wants welfare and everybody that wants a free lunch, everybody that's a criminal, everybody that wants to get away with murder is going to come to New York, and that, boy, that's stupid, that'll destroy the city, that's the plan. And then as that falls, and as they bring in even more foreigners, that boils into the next town, boils into the next city. And the incredible corruption of the Democratic Party and all the money they steal and all the things they do. They want to destroy all the tourist centers. They want ugliness. They want homelessness. They want homeless camps everywhere. They want rats running around the street. While Larry Fink lives on a 20,000-acre gigantic mansion that rival what the King of England has. But, oh, he's up there telling you if you're making $100,000 a year, you're a rich, evil, white person, and you better do whatever he says. and they're destroying the means of production. The big banks don't want competition. They want to destroy the means of production so they can then issue you credits when you're in debt. They already own 80%+ of the assets in the world, but now they've got to get the last 20%, not just because they're greedy like Scrooge McDuck that wants to swim around in gold, but because they want to dictate everything to us. They don't want you to have anything. Not a garden, not your health, not a little farm, not a skill, not be able to say 2+2=4, not be able to fix an engine because all the engines are computerized and won't let you. They want a post-human world with robots delivering us all our food and everything else, the poison food. It is a premeditated international globalist takeover, and they admit it. It is deliberate. It is a plan, and you can stop a deliberate plan. Deliberate, deliberate, premeditated, 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 premeditated.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
I am making this historic announcement on Friday, December 12, 2025. The future of InfoWars hangs in the balance. It is in your hands. They're having a state auction in January next year in about a month, but we don't even have the money for payroll or for satellites or for bandwidth. We've got this next shot to survive, but if we don't get the funds in, we shut down. So we're selling 3 emergency limited edition posters at InfoWarsStore.com right now that are critical to us staying on the air. And I want to encourage you to go now to get I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, John Paul Jones poster, and 2 others, Make No Peace with Evil and Defend the West, Iconic Crusades. Go now to InfoWarsStore.com to get 1 or more of these iconic posters, limited edition. We cannot do it without you. I have fired the bat signal. Take action now if you want to stand with us in this fight at InfoWarsStore.com, and I salute you for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Live from Austin, Texas, you're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome to the fourth hour of The Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. And we've had a wild past few days, maybe even past week, on Instagram, on X, on the news, on everywhere online has gone insane over the fact that the Pope recently announced quite an alliance with Islam as he visited various mosques in Algiers. Now, what's funny is that not only did he say that he thought that the West should be less fearful Islam and that now mosques are proper spaces dedicated to God, this is absolutely antithetical to everything that the history of the Catholic Church, for example, the way it positioned itself throughout the Middle Ages in opposition to Islam, in opposition to the taking over of the Holy Land by Muslims, thus launching several crusades for the purpose of bringing the Holy Land back under the sway of Christian kings and emperors and so forth. All of that has been pretty much undone by the post-1960s Vatican II revolution in the Roman Catholic Church through the documents of Vatican II, such as Nostra Aetate and Lumen Gentium. Both of those documents contain within them significant chapters and sections that deal with the opening up, you could say, of the attitude of what the church is and who God's people are to now include any group that professes any kind of generic theism or perhaps even deism. The book or the documents of Vatican II specify that now Roman Catholics, Muslims, and Jews all worship the same God together, and that the plan of salvation now includes Islam. That's the terminology explicitly from Vatican II.
What's wild about this, again, is the radical departure from the attitude that the church had throughout the Middle Ages. Now, on top of that, this is taking place, that is, Pope Leo's discussions and statements, at the same time as there's Christian persecution by Islam, by Western proxy Islamic groups in places like Nigeria and Sudan and Syria, where we saw, for example, the installing of Jolani and the destruction of countless Orthodox, Catholic, and other Christian groups in Syria, the oldest sites of Christianity. Syrian Antioch is where the Christians are first called Christians in the book of Acts. And in the midst of all of this, Pope Leo comes out and says, we must be less fearful of Islam. As we are told, we should open our borders and accept more migrants. We just saw in Spain, the Roman Catholic Church affirmed and agreed with the importation of hundreds of thousands of new migrants. And this was all, of course, by design to destroy the existing European peoples and their nation states. This was admitted about a century ago or more in the Kalergi plan by Count Kudenhof Kalergi. He wrote a book called Practical Idealism. And in that book, he says that we will breed out through bringing in countless foreign groups and entities, particularly Muslims, into Europe to destroy the existing people group. He says then they will be, quote, mongrelized, his words, and there will be a Jewish supremacy that will arise out of this. That's not my words. That's his words in Practical Idealism. This plan of Kalergi was presented to the Royal Society elites. And they said, we like your plan and we like Lord Lionel Curtis's plan of the Commonwealth of God, a kind of generic socialist federation along the lines of Cecil Rhodes and John Ruskin's plan for a new order of the world. So all of these plans and discussions and theories that people mention, is it the British Empire, is it the Rothschilds and their Zionist approach? It's all of those things together. They all synthesize very well together. At the same time, we had a woman throughout all the large Roman Catholic websites like LifeSite News. Her name was Liz Yore, and she gave a talk at a recent conservative Catholic event. And as I guess she's a journalist or something to do with the pro-life organizations, and she used to work with Catholic Charities. And she said that Catholic Charities is not the only entity responsible for the importation and destruction of the borders in the U.S. and in the West. She says that the Catholic Church itself and its diocese and its bishops are openly, adamantly supporting this importation, and they make tremendous amounts of money from it. Now, there's a monetary angle to it, but there's also a longer, larger technocratic socialist plan to reshape the nations, to reshape the continents into socialist unions. We're going to talk about where that plan comes from and who planned it, how old that plan is, here in a moment when we look at some of these texts that we have. But I also wanted to mention that Leo had a pretty wild statement where he said that the reason that Muslims and Christians can get together is because, quote, we both share a view of Mary that leads to communion. He says, quote, communion between Christians and Muslims takes shape under the mantle of Our Lady of Africa. Here in Algeria, the maternal love of Lala Mariam, or maybe Lala Rona, gathers everyone as children with rich diversity, with shared aspiration of dignity, love, justice, and peace. Communion is a specific term that has to do with sharing in the body and blood of Christ. It's a Eucharistic sacramental reality. So for him to use that terminology with Muslims who don't believe in anything like that at all is absolutely bizarre and intentional, I would argue. Just like when Vatican II says that Muslims, Christians, and Jews all worship the same God, the assumption is kind of like a Freemasonic teaching that we're all on the same path and all those religions are now salvific and can lead to our final goal. Thus, it really negates the person of Christ. Remember, Jesus said in John 14, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. In 1 John 2, verses 20 to 22, it says that if you reject the Son, you don't get the Father. So anyone who rejects Christ as the Messiah does not have the Father. And I have to wonder if these people know anything about Islam, because Islam explicitly says Allah is not a father and has no sons. He doesn't have human sons. He doesn't have a son of God. So Allah is explicitly not the God of Jesus and not the God of the Christians, according to the Muslims. So this is a really preposterous, ultimately Freemasonic teaching that all the religions are really just masks of the same generic theism or generic deity. And I think that it also comes in the context of this bizarre back and forth that we're having between Trump, his administration, and the people within it, and the papacy. So it's hard to figure out like exactly what's going on here. There was the story that Cardinal Christoph back in January was invited to the Pentagon and spoke to several members of Trump's administration. And there was reportedly tense words exchanged and perhaps even intimidation and quote threats. We don't know exactly what was said, but allegedly, according to news reports, there were discussions of the Avignon papacy as a reminder to the Pope who really runs things. That's a reference to the time when the Western Church was what's under what's called the Great Western Captivity in the Middle Ages. And this has to do with about 70 years where the seat of Peter moved from Rome to France, Avignon, France. And at that point, it was under almost a century of French kings controlling and running the papacy, the supposed chair of Peter in France. It eventually went back to Rome. But the reference appears to have been a coded, or perhaps not even coded, statement that the state is who's running things. And perhaps because this is an American pope, he was being reminded that you're an American and the Pentagon, the State Department, and the elites that control it are running things. So Francis and Leo might have spoken out against wars, but the position that they're giving against the wars isn't the historic Roman Catholic position on just war. They might argue that it's not a just war. But Leo went so far as to say that no wars waged in the name of God have anything to do with righteousness, and God doesn't hear any of those prayers when you wage war in the name of God. He must not be familiar with all of those Old Testament passages where war was waged in the name of God, and he must have forgotten that his own papacy waged many wars in the Middle Ages, including the papal states itself having many of its own wars and its own standing army, particularly during the Medici period. Pope Alexander VI had his own standing army. All of that is erased because the papacy has decided now that it's in a kind of socialist, technocratic, pro-WEF, pro-globalist era of its papacy. But that doesn't mean that I have to then say, well, then Donald Trump is right, and we must go to war for Israel, and we must do everything that Israel wants. I had a debate with Andrew Meyer, a guy that is a nice guy. We've met him in person. He came on my channel the other day, and we did a debate on whether or not this was in the best interest of America to go to war in Iran. And it wasn't really about Israel. But the funny thing is that as soon as, for example, the oil was seized in the Maduro operation, that oil, according to mainstream news reports, went directly to Israel. So the oil that were supposedly is supposedly, for some of these apologists, the basis for why we're engaging in these operations, including the Maduro event and the exfiltration of him, as well as the Iran event, is supposedly to help shore up American oil interests and to help number go up for GDP. Now, I don't think that's really helping anything. It's an absurd line of argumentation. And that line of argumentation, as we see many of the Trump apologists laying out, really this is, I think, devaluing humanity at the expense of the GDP. This is what Pam Bondi said, right? Who cares about Epstein if number go up, if GDP go up? So who cares if we're run by PDF pedophile elites, if the elites are compromising and controlling politicians? Who cares because number go up? Well, number's not even going up. And plus, if the dollar is inflated into oblivion and collapses, the number will always go up because there will always be more dollars printed, and you can always inflate and give the impression that the economy is doing well through all of this trickery. But we all know that it's not doing well, and anyone under the age of boomer basically can't buy a house or own property or plan for any kind of normal family lifestyle. And that's all by design. The plans, of course, are to destroy the economy, eventually to transition us into some kind of global economy. And all of that was, again, discussed at Bilderberg, as we saw this week. And Dan Dix did a great coverage of that. Alex had Dan Dix on. That was a great show. If you missed it, I would say go watch that, because no one covered Bilderberg. Dan Dix, myself on YouTube, Alex talking to Dan Dix, and Jason Burmes. That was it. No one else covered Bilderberg, because apparently all of that went away, right? Once Trump got in, oh, it's all fixed. Bilderberg doesn't matter anymore. There's no such thing as elite steering committees, technocrats, et cetera, zillionaires running things. No, they all stepped down because Trump. And yet in the last 8 months to a year, we've seen a disastrous turn by the Trump administration for the worse, particularly pivoting at the point of saying that who cares about Epstein? You're not MAGA. If you want to know about Epstein, if you want people prosecuted, you're low IQ. And then we get a blasphemous presentation of Trump as Jesus healing people in their sick beds, healing the boomers as they lay on their sick beds from COVID and the stabbies that they got and the boosters. And of course, no, this isn't Jesus. This is just Trump as a doctor. I don't know doctors that wear red Jesus robes, but apparently it's supposed to be just a doctor with the hosts of heaven behind him. All of this is absurd, and I think we see a sort of megalomaniacal turn, which is very unfortunate because we did see so many good things happening. So we have to remember there were a lot of good actions and a lot of good movements early on, but things have turned for the worse, and it has to oftentimes do with foreign policy, because once we get to that issue, we realize that we are not as free as we thought we were. We are quickly reminded of the oligarchical elite in the background that still run and still control things. The overall agenda still marches forward. As Theo Vaughn said, we got politicians and Dalai Lamas slurping on kids, and nobody is saying anything about it. Everyone's acting like this is business as usual. Theo Vaughn was 100% correct. Now, what does this mean? It means that we cannot fix things, and we cannot assume that some single politician has the means and the ability to overturn a massive centuries-long oligarchy that has entrenched itself mainly through money printing and through the Federal Reserve banking system. That can't be undone by one guy in one or two administrations. So we shouldn't have unrealistic expectations of any single politician getting all of that done. But beyond that, it's really not even about Trump himself, right? I think mature, educated adults should be able to go by the issues, right? Instead of being on teams, it's almost like it's like UFC or something, or again, back to WWF. We're not on teams. We're on issues, and that's the most important thing. And if Trump's wrong about warp speed, if he's wrong about, the Epstein files, if he's wrong about Iran, then we have to disagree with those issues. But you've got people who essentially adopted a cult attitude that you can't disagree or you can't criticize issues or positions without suddenly being anti-MAGA, or you're not a true American, you're a traitor, you're a foreign agent and an operative. And so we have to be careful of all these traps and the false dialectics. Again, one of those dialectics is, well, if I disagree with the Iran war, and if I disagree with the Zionist position and the need to go to war for Israel, then I must choose Islam as an aid, an ally. Islam is not an ally. In fact, Islam, as many of the rabbis say, and Zionists say, is the broom of Judaism. It's the thing that comes in and clears the way for what Jews believe will be a future Jewish supremacy and a Jewish state run out of Jerusalem or perhaps Tel Aviv. that will be the center of the world in the future. That's the Jewish supremacy attitude going all the way back to ancient rabbinic traditions about the nation state of Israel and their Messiah that's not Christ. Or perhaps Moses Hess, the founder of modern Zionism in its political reality and also the father of modern utopian socialism. Those two things go together. Now, I don't have to choose between Tony Soprano and the five families of New York, right? Why do I have to? That's a false choice. But everybody seems so easily duped into, well, I either have to choose Laura Loomer or Sneeko. It's only two options. There's no other possible options. What about the Christian option? What about an Orthodox Christian option that's not Zionism or Islam, that's not Mossad or Hamas? Like, what about some other option? Maybe we should start thinking outside of these basic bitch dialectics that everybody falls into. And again, Trump will be out of office in not that long. And then what? Are we going to be members of some new cult? Are we going to be in the Gavin Newsom cult, the Kamala cult, the Big Mike cult? It's all absurd. The only way to fix things is to understand that the real power structure is the oligarchical elite that control things at a corporate and banking level. Everybody has now conveniently forgotten the whole Epstein fiasco. And that was partly, I think, why the timing, I know that the war was planned before Epstein, but the timing of the war suddenly put Epstein on the back burner or out of everyone's minds when it was the biggest story in decades. And it was easily removed via a sudden war that was supposedly necessary. Why? Because of an imminent threat, but that's been an imminent threat for how many decades, according to Netanyahu? They are 2 weeks away from a bomb. And then 5 years later, they're 2 weeks away from a bomb. Five years later, they're 2 weeks away from a bomb. So every 5 years, they're 2 weeks away from a bomb. And it's the same model of Oded Yanon. It's the same model of the Clean Break Strategy. And it's the same model of the Seven Nations Plan that Wesley Clark talked about. It's the same plan. There might be modifications to specific operations in specific countries, because if you compare Oded Yanon to Clean Break, some of the nations listed change and some of the plans change a bit. But overall, it's the same strategy and the same plan, and it's the same reason why we did what we did in Iraq. It's the same reason why we did what we did in Syria, and it all ties back to 9/11. And cui bono, who gains from 9/11? Well, certainly not Americans and not the so-called petrodollar. Now, I do want to remind everybody that there will be a big debate this weekend, and this is hosted by a couple of Tucker's producers. And if you go to my X account, you'll see at the top of it, or very near the top of it, there is a live debate in Nashville this weekend. This will actually tie into some of the things that we're discussing right now, but I will be live debating two Freemasons, one of whom is Chase Geyser. You may have heard of Chase Geyser. He's former InfoWars host. I think he's moved on to do other things. I'm not exactly sure what he's up to. Not criticizing him or dissing him, just saying we did agree to do a public formal debate with me versus him and his friend. And that will be live in Nashville this weekend. This weekend, Saturday, April 18th at 6 p.m. And you can get tickets to that. It may be sold out, or it may be nearing sold out. It's not a massive venue. It probably holds 100, 150 people. But you can get those tickets if you go to my X account at the very top. And there's the image and the link. Now, to get back to the subject that we're discussing, which is the globalist turn, we can see that Leo has fallen on the side of the dialectic that's saying we need Chrislam, we need the alliance of Islam and Christianity. And again, he didn't just go visit mosques and say that mosques are spaces proper to the worship of God. He also signed another joint declaration with the imams. They're signing what's called the Golden Book in one of the largest mosques there in Algiers. And this is relevant because we're beginning to see perhaps what Frank Herbert foresaw. Now, Frank Herbert was more than just a science fiction author, the author, of course, of the Dune series. He was also at some level, I want to say a neocon, perhaps, speechwriter for the GOP and for certain GOP elites. I think that's right. And he also studied quite a bit of, perennial philosophy and syncretism and comparative religion. And he foresaw in those stories, if you're not aware, and Dune 3 is coming out very soon, by the way, he foresaw a union of Islam and Catholicism. Isn't that fascinating? And now what's being pushed openly is Chrislam by the Pope. We're going to talk about Dune, the predictive programming in Dune, and Chrislam when we come back after this break. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of jaysanalysis.com.
I want to make a massive announcement right now. I mean, this is just bonker town. What it does is just... I feel 20 years younger. I'm not kidding you. Ultra Methylene Blue. Blue.
I know. Blue. I love it. This stuff works, man.
I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Ultra Methylene Blue. 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 I mean, this is just bonker town.
I love it.
I just can't shut up about it, up about it, up about it. Ultra Methylene Blue, 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 blue. I just can't shut up about it, up about it, up about it. Up. This stuff works. Get yours now at thealexshowstore.com. It is just beyond spectacular. Our medical grade USP Ultra Methylene Blue, exclusively at thealexshowstore.com, has taken the country by storm. You've seen the rave reviews. All of our guests that have taken it have been blown away. Zen, clarity, focus like a fog has lifted. It's not a stimulant, but it feels like one with no letdown. But the best part is it's so good for your cells, so good for your mitochondria. It's incredible. Now we have it in sealed capsules with organic vitamin C to supercharge it as well. Get a 1 month supply so you can travel with it. Talk to your physicians before you take it because it's very, very powerful. It can interact with some drugs. But after you've done your research, get your Ultra Methylene Blue either in liquid or now in capsules exclusively at thealexshowstore.com and it funds our operations. And if you subscribe, you can lock in 50% off right now on all future orders and cancel anytime. Take action now at thealexshowstore.com. Become a subscriber and lock in 50% off on top of the already incredible savings. Thealexshowstore.com is the destination of health, liberty, and freedom.
Bovine Colostrum Plus, a really incredible new product that's flying off the shelves. What if one simple scoop a day could strengthen your body's natural defenses at every single stage of life? This is Bovine Colostrum Plus, nature's very first superfood, now in its purest, most potent form. For teens and kids, Colostrum Plus delivers 4,000 milligrams of immune-boosting IgG antibodies and 20 grams of premium protein to power growth, crush colds before they start, and keep young athletes recovering faster and staying in the game. In your 20s and 30s, it rebuilds your gut barrier, sharpens focus, and helps you bounce back from tough workouts and late nights like you're still 21. Hitting 40, 50, and beyond? Well, Bovine Colostrum Plus fights back against age-related immune decline, supports healthy inflammation levels, and keeps your joints, skin, and energy feeling years younger. One scoop, 500 milligrams of soothing marshmallow root for your gut, 500 milligrams of lactoferrin, nature's ultimate defender, and zero junk. Get it today at thealexjonesstore.com.
I've been an oil field for as long as I've been an info warrior, 18 years. And Texan, born and raised, so I know like knives like you do. And I finally broke down and ordered one. I got the neon orange, and I'm blown away. I've had Benchmark knives that are easily $400. Had them for a year, lost them. This thing has the same feel, same quality, same, I mean, everything about it. I haven't had a knife stay this sharp in a long time, and I'm like horrible with equipment. I'm like very abusive with knives at work every day. I'm extremely impressed. I'm very impressed. So anybody out there listening, who knows if there's a knife comes back in stock, get one. You know, any of them. I want to get the ring knife when it comes back out. Other than that, I'll join all the supplements and,
Yeah, particularly the pocket knives, the folding knives, the flip knives are super high quality at incredibly low prices. I mean, these same knives sell in the stores all day for like $80. We're selling for like $40. We'll be right back.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order. It's Alex Jones. We now take you live to the Central Texas Command Center in the heart of the resistance. You're listening to the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back to the fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of BaseAnalysis.com. Be sure and follow me on X. You can also find my YouTube channel. I just hit 200,000 subscribers. So I want to remind you that we do cover this material, this type of material, and more on a regular, consistent basis. I do live streams almost every day or two on my channel. It's a lot of fun. We got a growing community over there. So come join me at Jay's Analysis or Jay Dyer on YouTube. We're talking about the move towards Chrislam, and I mentioned Frank Herbert and his background and the philosophy that he put into the Dune novels. And as the series progresses, it gets more and more wild and more abstract and esoteric, but also perhaps prophetic. Again, within the Dune story, we have not just this idea of a future where the AI takes over and eventually gets banned. They had to do what they called a Butlerian jihad against AI. But the reason they had to do a Butlerian jihad is also because there's a union between the Roman Catholic Church of the future and Islam. And they have a new Bible that's called the Orange Catholic Bible, which includes a lot of Sufi and Islamic indigenous sort of prayers. It's almost a kind of triad of syncretism of Islam, Sufism, and Catholicism, and paganism altogether. And Frank Herbert, I think, foresaw the possibility that this might be a potential future religion, a future religion that could in some way perhaps prepare the way for the universe's super being, the Kwisatz Haderach, as it's called in the novel. If we translate that into reality, that would, of course, be a kind of antichrist. Now remember, Islam is predicated on the idea that Allah has no sons and Christ is just a human man. He's merely a prophet, a good guy, but a mere prophet. According to 1 John, that's actually the spirit of Antichrist. To deny the deity of the Son of God in classical Christian theology for the last 2,000 years, and according to 1 John chapter 2, means that you've really surrendered the essence of Christianity. This is why the First Ecumenical Council at Nicaea solidified the doctrine that the Son is homoousios, or equally divine with the Father. That means he's fully God. He is eternally begotten of the Father, and thus his natural sonship is the means by which we become sons of God through baptism. That's Paul's teaching in Galatians 3. So to deny those ideas would then be to put one outside of classical Christianity, and according to 1 John 2, of the spirit of Antichrist. So I understand that, for example, Tucker's idea is perhaps to drive a wedge between this plan that perhaps Zionist or rabbinic Judaism has to use Islam as a way to go to war against the Christian West to wipe out what they consider Edom or Rome. But the problem is that you can't make an alliance with Antichrist against another Antichrist. We know that rabbinic Judaism hates Christianity. It's open about that. It always has been in its Talmud and in its teachings codified since the 3rd, 4th, 5th century onwards. But it doesn't make Islam suddenly a friend of Christianity because Islam appears to say that we're friendly and when we have this shared idea that Jesus is a prophet and Mary is a virgin. Yeah, but Jesus isn't just a prophet. And to say that he's just a prophet is, again, an antichrist spirit, according to 1 John 2. So this is really fundamental to understand that you can't make an alliance with Antichrist as if you're going to join with Tony Soprano against the five families. It's not Christian. It's not Orthodox. It doesn't work. It's not going to be a feasible system. And Islam, for example, is all about child brides. It's all about all kinds of degenerate practices. And so the mask of morality that it has is really that. It's a mask. It's a performative religion. It's Sneeko going and praying in public and showing himself at Mecca on his phone so everybody sees him doing religious works. It's performative. It's not an internal transformation of the man by grace. That's why Islam is a religion of externals.
explicitly. And they also teach in the Quran that you have absolutely every right when you're in the minority to smile with your face, but hate them in your heart. And when Islam, when it's strict Orthodox Islam, they believe that they have a duty to rid the world of idolaters and including Trinitarians. If you believe in the Trinity, you're an idolater, according to Islam. So the nice face that many Muslims, cultural Muslims, secular society Muslims put on is a temporary face until they gain the upper hand. And then they believe that you are to be put under subjugation. The Quran actually teaches this, as do the Hadiths. It's not just the Quran. It's the Hadith traditions as well. And on top of that, we have to understand, which never gets brought up, except that now it begins to be brought up more on X because people keep sort of pushing the issue. Nobody's talking about the fact that the Muslim groups that are the most horrendous, typically, are the ones fostered by Western intelligence agencies like the CIA and the Mossad. They're the ones propping up people like Jelani, to take down Assad, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, etc. Those are all Western proxy groups. And I think the same thing is going on with probably with Boko Haram and those African groups that are terrorizing the Christians there. It's the same Western strategy of tension to fund and use these groups as proxies. So where was Pope Leo on any of that? If he wanted to call out the problems of America and the Trump administration and so forth, then he could go all the way back to funding and supporting radical Islam. But he did probably the worst possible thing, which was to say, actually, maybe we should be BFF with Islam. Maybe we need to buddy up with Islam. Maybe we need to let more migrants into Europe. This is insane. And the papacy itself, the Vatican has a giant leonine wall built centuries ago around it to keep people out. I've been to the Vatican. When you go to the Vatican, there's Secret Service everywhere. It's preposterous. It's insane levels of hypocrisy. Because they're not letting all of these migrants come live in the Vatican. I mean, I might listen to your moral virtue signaling and your moral blackmail if you actually operated this way. But they don't operate this way. And that's because the Vatican is a long captured institution. Who's it captured by? Well, turns out we've been lecturing through several elite books on my channel for a long time. For 10 years, we've lectured through the top elite establishment books. No one else does this. Mine is the only channel that consistently lectures through about 70 now in the last decade, top writings of the elite. And all of these books say exactly what they're doing. I just did a very long interview with a very popular musician and commenter, Zuby. We did an hour-long interview today about who the elite are and how does Epstein give us a window into that power structure. Well, everybody's already forgot about Epstein. And the same oligarchs that are united with Epstein just met at Bilderberg. And what do they talk about? Were they talking about Trump memes and this and that? No. That's fodder for people to yap about and tweet about, which everybody will forget in a week anyway. But the oligarchical technocratic agenda keeps marching on because we don't look at those people and focus on those people running things behind the scene, but also in public. So they're semi-hidden and semi-public. And I think the elite figured out a while back that that's actually a better method than having a totally secret society way to run things or being totally out in public. Just make it semi-private where you have public groups like Bilderberg, CFR, Trilateral, IMF, World Bank, Brookings Institute, on and on and on, RAND Corporation, thousands of think tanks, NGOs, foundations, steering committees. Those run things. And you notice you don't vote for any of them. They don't change. They stay there. The CFR was set up in the 1920s by the Rockefellers. Has anybody voted for the CFR? And yet you've had countless CFR members be heads of the CIA, heads of the OSS, heads of every possible government agency you could think of. That's who is the permanent breakaway national security establishment that runs things. And you're always given to the fodder and the puppets and the people in the front that you think run things. And then you vote the rascals out and you get a new batch of rascals that do all the same stuff. And when are we going to figure out that nothing changes because the system is set up so that nothing changes? That's the reality of things. It's the old boy networks like the OSS and the CIA that we've been lecturing about on my channel. Again, No one else lectures to these books. Why are more people not coming and watching my channel and what I talk about? I don't understand. Everybody will watch every possible idiot influencer out there, but they won't come and listen to the elites themselves telling you how the world works and how they run things. And you might be surprised to know that they actually tell you everything in the books. And not just in these books, but also in the fiction books. Books like Dune, right? Dune 3 is coming out. Dune 3 seems to be pretty prophetic because it predicted a union of Catholicism and Islam. And we're seeing that play out right before our very eyes this very week. And it was mentioned in the Vatican II documents in the 1960s explicitly. So when we study these people and when we look at things like the Bilderberg Group, Daniel Esselin's classic book, of course, Esselin has been on Alex Jones countless times for two decades or more. I just did a lengthy interview with Daniel Esselin that will be going up pretty soon. And I talked to him about all of this and we came to the same conclusion that Epstein is a window into elite organized crime structures that operate on an international specter level scale like you see in James Bond. Also this week, my really long in-depth interview on John Kiriakou's show will be going up. So I'd encourage you to go watch that because we went very deep as well. And I took a lot of these questions to John as a probably, you know, the most prominent CIA whistleblower who blew the whistle on the torture program and then was prosecuted by the Obama administration for doing that and went through quite a bit to be, you know, persecuted for standing up for what was right. And I took a lot of these questions to John. I said, you know, I want to know what you think. Do you think that I'm right when I give this analysis and when I talk about these elite texts and so forth? And he said, absolutely. I interviewed Colonel Douglas McGregor a while back and we had the exact same conversation about the global elites and their plans. And he said, you're absolutely correct. WEF, Davos, all of these entities are pushing for this technocratic agenda. And it doesn't matter what politicians come and go. Those things don't change. Why? Because we're actually run by this supranational, international elite. A huge faction of it, obviously, is Zionist. And that's why things don't change. So we've got to focus on Bilderberg, and we got to focus on CFR and Trilateral and all these things, because that's who really runs things. It's not Donald Trump calling the shots on everything, even though there's an appearance that Donald Trump calls the shots on everything. And Trump seems to think that he's infallible, impeccable, and he can't lose, and he can only win. Well, pride goes before a fall. And God has a tendency to humble people who get extremely arrogant like that. So I don't hate Donald Trump or anything like that. I would like to see the country flourish. I'd like to see us get back on track where we were, you know, prior to this last 8 months or year of going off the rails. So we got to look at Bilderberg. We got to look at the Federal Reserve because those are the entities that don't get voted out, that don't change. Doesn't matter if the Federal Reserve head comes and goes. The Federal Reserve itself is the problem. It controls and hijacks the nation and its productivity and its monetary power through the fiat fractional reserve banking system. And guess what? All of these books admit that. When Carol Quigley wrote Tragedy and Hope, he spent the first 200-300 pages talking about the fractional reserve banking system and how it controls the nations and how the Rothschilds figure out that that was a great way to, for example, in the 1700s through the Paribas system, control France. And then they expanded to the Bank of England. And they expanded elsewhere through proxies like J.P. Morgan. So this is the real power structure. It's not a conspiracy theory when they admit it in their books. It would be a theory if there wasn't evidence to back it up. It's not a theory when the people involved in it admit it. And we all know this from lower level criminal stuff, right? People know that criminals like to brag. They're very braggadocious. They're very narcissistic. They crave the attention and the praise from getting away with it. Serial killers. We know that serial killers do this. Well, guess what? People at the level of a Kissinger and a Brzezinski and these people, they do the same thing. It's just that they're smarter than Jeffrey Dahmer or any of these other people. They brag about it in their 500, 600 page books, which nobody reads. So they know that nobody's going to do anything and nobody's going to care because most people are not going to speak out against something like that because they'll be perceived as oddballs, crazy, kooks, or whatever. So the CIA invented the term conspiracy theorist during the JFK event to castigate anyone who would question it as some immediate nutball. And that was all admitted and declassified recently, by the way, or readmitted via the JFK files. But, you know, we saw this turn, I think, with the JFK files, which is interesting that people have already forgotten about that one. When we saw James Jesus Angleton, the Israeliophile operative of the CIA, essentially kind of move the CIA away from more of an Arab contact setting towards an Israeliophile setting. We know that, for example, under Angleton, there was a backdoor channel with the Mossad where a lot of those declassifications showed he was passing intelligence to them, unbeknownst even to the rest of the CIA. And that's because he had commitments to the World Zionist League at that time, thinking that that would be a way to win the Cold War. If they could get Israel on board with the CIA's approach, then they could defeat Stalin and the NKVD. That was the thought process or his reasoning there. But then what happens is that sort of puts you in league with that entity, and then you become more and more on the hook to Israel. And then what happens is, you know, we saw the JFK event. You see the rise of AIPAC after that. And then you see more and more influence on American foreign policy through those kinds of interests. So that's how we got into the dilemma that we're in. And to even talk about those things for so many decades was actually just a no-no. You couldn't even talk about that, much less think about it. And now we're seeing legislation being pushed, of course, to try to criminalize even mentioning or talking about that in various states in the United States. So that tells you right there that that's exactly what's going on. They wouldn't criminalize it if it wasn't a real problem and a real threat. So how do we get out from under this? Well, we got to figure out how to expose and not be under international, unaccountable, unelected bureaucrats and NGOs and think tanks and foundations that have the ability to change laws and lawmakers through lobbying or whatever, or just bypass the law and do whatever they want because they're outside of regional law prosecution or whatever, right? International institutions have that power, that ability. They can escape. They can get away from regional prosecution. So we have to understand that we're under international control and influence that's not just located in one specific area or region. It's international corporations, international banks, and they hold countries hostage through things like IMF debt and IMF loans. And those loans come with stipulations that if you take that money, you're now beholden to a lot of Western ideas and Western power and influence. So once again, what is that? That's the banking system. That's the central banking, private banking model. That's the real locus of power. If they didn't have that, the rest of it would fall apart. But that's the real locus of power. And we still have not figured that out, right? People thought, oh, well, we got Doge in, and Doge is investigating USAID, and that's all great. But that's just one, arm of the leg of the octopus. And when you cut that one off, there's 20 other arms. So yeah, it's good to cut one major funder and covert operations thing like USAID, but that just create another one, right? So who though? Well, it's the head of the octopus. You can't just cut off one arm. It's the whole thing, right? You can't just cut off one of the heads, one of the snakes on Medusa's head. She'll just grow another one. It's Medusa's head itself, which is the oligarchical elite that I'm talking about. So people at Bilderberg, and the fact that there was only three people at Bilderberg protesting it and exposing it shows us that we haven't really come that far, unfortunately. Don't mean to be blackpilling. I'm just making the point that we want to change things. We want to fix things. Well, the technocratic agenda marches on, and Donald Trump was not a stop at all to that agenda. And they want a CBDC. They want a controlled digital universal fiat currency that the private central banks can snatch out of your wallet at any moment, your crypto wallet. I'm not talking about Bitcoin. I'm talking about crypto CBDC, totally two different things. That's what they want. They want a centralized control mechanism, not a decentralized digital currency. That's why they don't like Bitcoin. And you saw, for example, even with Trump, right? We heard, oh, it's strategic Bitcoin reserve. Never happened. What do we get? Oh, let's have stable coins and a stable coin fiat reserve. But that's not what we originally heard about. We heard about Bitcoin and that shifted over into stable coins. That's not Bitcoin. It's something else. So what's the overall plan? Well, we saw when Dan Dix did his report that Bilderberg wants to focus on AI and tech and control. You saw Palantir related people involved in that Bilderberg discussion. Again, stuff that Theo Vaughn has called out on various podcasts, stuff that has been, you know, exposed as involved in all kinds of conflicts, surveillance, you know, overstepping people's privacy, all part of an idea to create a tracking, tracing, total information awareness grid. And if you read a 0 to 1, Peter Thiel's book, he says that, yeah, this was all created for the NSA and for total control, supposedly to fight terror. Well, who's going to be the terrorists of the future? Who are they saying is the terrorists? Well, it turns out Klaus told us this in Cyberpolygon. He said, anyone in alternative media who questions the narratives, and when we have a Cyberpolygon, Klaus said, all of those who oppose the system's solutions are the terrorists. So that's who the terrorists are, anyone who's opposing the system. The NATO cognitive warfare document said the exact same thing. The future terrorists are those who oppose NATO's cognitive warfare, which includes drones, Skynet, implantable nanotech, etc., and the changing of the biology of the human itself through genetic experimentation and through gene therapies. Right. The NATO document says that those are the terrorists. If you oppose it, you're the terrorist. Not Al-Qaeda, not ISIS. That's not the terrorists of the future. The terrorists of the future are the masses who don't want this stuff shoved down their throat. So we cannot lose focus and lose sight on the fact that the socialist international Fabian technocracy is what will continue to march forward. That is the CBDC WEF plan. That's the Davos plan. That's the Bilderberg plan. They're the same. You've got people from Bilderberg going and being the political heads of Canada. Like, this is what's really going on. This is who's running things. And only three people were protesting it. That's insane to me. I remember years ago, and Alex said this to Dan Dix, there would be 4,000 people protesting Bilderberg. What has happened? Because Trump got elected, we suddenly have, oh, well, none of those things matter. There is no Bilderberg anymore because Trump got elected. That's crazy. We totally lost sight of who's really running things because we have this sort of puppet show that gives the appearance of opposition, but it's like WWF, right? We can't forget that party politics itself will never really be a long-term solution. You might run as an independent or as a GOP locally and get elected and do some good. I'm not saying you can't do that. But I think at the national level, you have to understand that international politics is probably never going to change because it's essentially controlled by people with tremendous amounts of money, billionaires, right? Adelson level billions of dollars is what really calls the shots in DC politics, not Jimmy Stewart in that movie, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, right? Where Mr. Smith decides that the fat cats are corrupt in Washington and why, by golly, he marches there and gets elected and gives them what for. Okay. That's not how it works. Okay. You don't do that. And I think in that movie, if you watch, it's pretty funny. It's so unrealistic. He gets the Boy Scouts to help him print up papers that expose the corruption. I mean, it's almost absurd satire with how silly it is. Now we have to focus on Bilderberg. We have to think about the, when you watch Dune 3, when it comes out, I'm looking forward to it, but think about who's really running things behind the scene, right? Who are the Bene Gesserits? Who's really running Baron Harkonnen and the Emperor and all these people from the background? It's a shadow elite. And that shadow elite is an oligarchy that doesn't go away with this or that election. Be sure and go to the Alex Jones store and support Alex there and get all those products. Follow me, Jay Dyer, on all the social media outlets.
I'm holding in my hands
two compounds that are guaranteed to change your life. T3, pure atomic iodine. Nobody else has it. It's next level. And ultramethylene blue, medical grade methylene blue. These two products together supercharge the mitochondria, the cells, clean out the body, and are game changers. Iodine is essential, meaning you die without it. The UN admits that most people that have cognitive disabilities is because of lack of iodine. You add ultramethylene blue to this, it supercharges everything. Ladies and gentlemen, T3 is now available at TheAlexJonesStore.com. The very best iodine that we know of that exists. There may be better. We'll adopt that if we can. But this is the best for sale we found, and we have the best medical grade, ultramethylene blue. Get yours now, right now. If you're a VIP member, for 50% off. Regular customers, 25% off. It funds the InfoWar, but more importantly, it is a game changer. If you don't take my advice and try this, you're insane. All you got to do is try it. You'll be blown away. Take action now. TheAlexJonesStore.com to get T3, now available, and methylene blue at TheAlexJonesStore.com. Ultimate Life Force. That's the name of the new product. This is hands down the strongest, most powerful spike protein detox out there with triple action. Taking all the major best-selling certified safe formulas and integrating it in to just a massive daily dose. And it isn't just to clean out your blood, ladies and gentlemen. It is so good for your whole body. It's got 400 milligrams of NAC alone. That is the precursor to glutathione. And just does incredible things for your whole body. Not just that, the energy, the stamina, all of it. Ladies and gentlemen, we're so excited about this formula. I don't have time to get into all the other great ingredients in it. Go to TheAlexJonesStore.com right now and check it out for yourself. This is so game-changing. Lesser formulas have already helped so many people that I've personally bought them for and, you know, given them to friends and family. This is amazing. Get yours now at TheAlexJonesStore.com for 50% off.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.